Thank you, Nick, and here we are again, sort of. It's on, it's off, it's in, it's out. The coup is underway. I've heard one senior Labour member claim today the coup is not underway. The process for replacing the Labour leader has not been triggered, the Prime Minister has stated in the last few minutes. I suppose one of the downsides of this will be somewhat desperate attempts to pretend that it's part of a pattern, that there's any comparison between someone simply not being very good at the job with people who were deeply corrupt or absolutely catastrophic. So Johnson went and Truss went for reasons that couldn't be more different from the reasons why Starmer still might go.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer has told a meeting of his cabinet that he will continue to govern and stay on as Prime Minister. More than 70 Labour MPs have called on Keir to step aside following heavy losses in last week's elections. It comes as the Home Secretary, Shaban Mahmood, has reportedly privately told Keir to set out a timetable to step down. From Downing Street, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has more.
He has just told a meeting of the cabinet that he takes responsibility for the election results, takes responsibility for delivering the change we've promised. He says the Labour Party has a process for challenging a leader, and that has not been triggered. He says the country expects us to get on with governing. That is what I'm doing, and that is what we must do.
The Communities Minister, Miatta Van Buller, has resigned from Keir's government. She's the first minister to quit as pressure mounts on the Prime Minister to set a timetable to leave. One of them is Kim Johnson, who has expressed her desire for Keir Starmer to leave. She represents Liverpool Riverside. She says Thursday's poll was just the tip of the iceberg.
I think we're looking at a failed political project. You know, for me, things started going badly wrong 2 weeks into our government. The powers that be decided it would be a good idea to take away the winter fuel allowance to very vulnerable pensioners. And then I think we've had many, many crises since then. Welfare rights reform, the WASPI women.
The cost of government borrowing has risen this morning. The pound's dropped against the dollar and the euro in response to increased uncertainty, while the interest rate on 10-year government bonds is now above 5%, a level last seen in 2008. The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, spoke to LBC earlier today.
Well, look, the Prime Minister's been very clear that he's not walking away. I recognise that colleagues will be worried off the back of the local elections last week, in particular those colleagues who represent those communities, and it's important that the Prime Minister engages with them and that we learn any lessons that we need to learn from our first 2 years in government to improve that electorally over the next 3 years.
Stay with LBC for the very latest developments. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 49 at 10,219. The pound bought $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather. Northern areas will see some sunny spells through today. Blustery showers developing by the afternoon with some patchy rain in the south. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Addis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 10 is the time. A minister has resigned, which is a moment of significance when it comes to the vultures circling. A still twitching Prime Minister. But it isn't a good sign, obviously. Do you ever get haunted by television sort of catchphrases or television moments? Is it because of social media? Is it because of memes? Is it because things get clipped up and therefore they assume a place in our consciousness that they wouldn't have assumed back in the day. You can probably only name sort of three or four moments from television in the pre-meme era that could be loosely described as immortal. We mentioned the elephant in the Blue Peter studio, didn't we? There's Del Boy falling through the bar on Only Fools and Horses, or in fact, probably two from that series. There's the Batman and Robin sequence as well from the Christmas special. But it's pretty hard, isn't it, in the days before memes, to think of the things that have become immortal, the moments that have become immortal. This morning, I don't know if you watched Succession, or indeed if you've listened to the Full Disclosure interview with Brian Cox, who played Logan Roy, but this morning I'm haunted by this moment.
I love you, but you are not serious people.
But also, as I prepare to talk to you about Keir Starmer's latest travails, that classic Mitchell and Webb moment when they are dressed as Nazis and sort of survey the situation, the unfolding military situation, and David Mitchell turns to Robert Webb, I think, and says, "Are we the baddies?" And you might be a little puzzled by the second one, but not, I presume, by the first one. The second one is because I am, for good or for ill, and I hope that this doesn't come as a major surprise to anybody, I am a member of the media. And sometimes I feel as though I have one foot in and one foot out. I will resist any urge to shake it all about for the duration of this morning's programme, I promise you. But I don't like the chandelier as well, of course, in Only Fools and Horses. Extraordinary. It was like the pre-meme meme machine. I am obviously a member of the media, but the one thing I'm not very good at, I'm not a normal member of the media. I don't go to the parties. I don't really have the politicians in the studio anymore. Not on a sort of rotating regular basis, whatever party they're from, although my door is always open for some of them. I don't like getting engaged in the Westminster shenanigans. I can tell when somebody's gone a little bit native because they start writing and talking a language I don't fully understand. And it is a language that they all speak and talk. This isn't a criticism of anybody by any stretch of the imagination. Quite possibly it's a criticism of me. But it just means that I sometimes think that the Westminster bubble, as we call it, can be somewhat detached from reality. And the tragedy, of course, for our country is that the Westminster bubble is not necessarily defined, but in large part constructed of people who are part of the problem. I mean, through no fault of their own, I don't want to make this personal. If my career had gone differently, I would be absolutely in the category that I'm describing now. But no decent democracy would have allowed Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss to be anointed and cheered into the heart of our democracy. No country with a fully functioning media could possibly have voted for Brexit because it was so obviously a stupid thing to do. Could possibly have put Boris Johnson in power. The same is true of the United States of America, by the way. We're not special. Because he was so obviously morally bankrupt and hideously incapable of lying straight in bed. The pretense this morning from the people who brought you Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss that Keir Starmer is somehow part of the same pattern is, it's as obnoxious as it is hilarious, isn't it? You know, Boris Johnson had to leave as Prime Minister because his own party had reached a point of such disgust with his moral depravity and dishonesty that he couldn't even assemble a cabinet. This is a man who put Nadine Dorries in his first cabinet, so he wasn't exactly averse to scraping whatever it is that lies beneath the bottom of a barrel. But by the time he went, he couldn't even persuade the flotsam and jetsam of his own ludicrous, filleted party to join a cabinet, because after the Chris Pincher affair, they knew it would just be a matter of time before there was another lie, another massive scandal that would come around and bite them all on the backside. And then Liz Truss, of course, greeted with cheers and ticker tapes by the Daily Mail and others, turned out, as anybody who understood anything, frankly,
could have predicted turned out to be an absolutely catastrophic decision. That's the media we've got. It keeps putting people and things in front of us that look shiny, so we vote for them, and then once we voted for them, they don't look shiny at all. They are things that hurt us, but you don't need to be a fully paid-up member of Marxism today to have clocked the fact that the very, very rich people somehow managed to keep getting richer while everybody else is getting poorer. And that is not unrelated. It's part of the reason why Zach Polanski, more on whom later, has managed to assume the sort of mantle of lazy leftish populism. Because it's a big gap, and one that Keir Starmer was never going to fill, simply because you can't really be a populist in power. And if you are a populist in power, you need a population to be so dishonest and deluded that it would, for example, keep buying MAGA hats, despite the fact that the bloke who brought you MAGA has reneged or betrayed on pretty much every single electoral promise that he made. But never mind. So it's a weird point in proceedings. As a member of the media, and listen, when I say that, I don't just mean people getting paid to do this. I also mean the people who are fully plugged in. In many ways, the typical LBC listener is a lot more plugged in to political discussion and political commentary than the person who is currently watching Lorraine or Good Morning Britain or whichever of those programmes is on at the moment. You are, by definition, more engaged in this. We don't do, you know, there's a soap opera going out with some, soap star going out with someone, or an influencer jumping out of an aeroplane. We talk about the news, and the news is almost always politics. So, I have mornings and moments where I catch myself, And I can't come over a little bit David Mitchell. I just sort of think, are we the enemy? By having a conversation, and today is only partly one of those days, because we obviously have to talk about this today. And I want to. And it could be that by the end of the programme today, the writing isn't just on the wall for the Prime Minister, but it's being bellowed at 1,000 decibels up and down the country. Or it could be that we're still in a holding pattern, and the King's Speech is tomorrow. He'll sit tight, hope to sweat it out, and somehow live to fight another day. I'd bet against that personally at the moment. I don't think you'll see blood on the carpet this morning, but I think you might see a roadmap for a seemly departure by the end of this week. And it's a media frenzy, inevitably. But what are the public actually thinking? What would be achieved by getting rid of Keir Starmer as Prime Minister? What would it change? So it's always self-interest that drives politicians. It's weird, isn't it? Because the offence of the Prime Minister can be very, very different. You can be a serial liar like Boris Johnson. You can be an economic hand grenade like Liz Truss. Or you can be someone perceived as being ineffective and weak, like Keir Starmer. But what motivates the abandonment of the project in all three of those cases is self-interest. It is politicians essentially deciding that their own chances of survival at the next ballot are being diminished by the bloke or the woman in the top job, as opposed to enhanced. It's why they put up with a Trump or a Johnson. I don't care if he's a liar. If the public are lapping this stuff up, then I'm absolutely on board. I'm four square behind it. I love the guy because he is enhancing my chances of getting re-elected at the next general election. It's only when they feel that the balloon has burst, or that the bubble has popped, that they will start abandoning a bandwagon that they had jumped onto with often unseemly alacrity. So they are abandoning Keir Starmer in close to their droves, because they think that somebody else will give them a better chance of keeping their seat at the next general election. And again, that's not a criticism. That's not an opinion. That's just counting. That is literally what they are doing. But what is likely to change? And why have we found ourselves in this curious space? And what confidence do you have that things will get better if there is indeed a change of personnel? We will do what we are required to do on mornings like this, and cross live to Downing Street, where LBC's political editor Natasha Clark awaits. And it is categorically one of those mornings when, having come on air shortly after 10 o'clock and crossing to Natasha shortly before quarter past, it's perfectly conceivable that something's happened I'm not yet aware of. Natasha, what's the latest?
James, the latest in Downing Street, and we are seeing that the cabinet has now started. Keir Starmer is hosting his top team in the building just behind me. But this morning, the latest news that we have from inside that room is that the Prime Minister is hanging on to power. He has told a meeting of cabinet this morning, "I take responsibility for the election results and for delivering the change we promised." He also goes on to say the Labour Party has a process for challenging a leader, and that has not been triggered. The country expects us to get on with governing. That is what I'm doing and what we must do as a cabinet. So a message there to anybody thinking about trying to oust him as Prime Minister. All of his cabinet, we know, have gathered today to hear what he had to say. Wes Streeting was, of course, the person that everybody is waiting to hear from. And the question now, as we go into this morning, and potentially this afternoon, is Wes Streeting going to act? Because we know now that there are 81 MPs that want to see Keir Starmer stand down. However, they are not all behind Wes Streeting, it's fair to say. Some of them want to wait for Andy Burnham to get back to Parliament, and some of them haven't made clear who they would back in a potential leadership contest. They just say that the Prime Minister's time is up. So as it stands today at 10:15, it's still not clear what's going to happen today, and I don't think anybody, James, that tells you that they know what's going to happen today, they absolutely can't. They just can't. Nobody knows what's going to happen. It is so febrile, somber in Downing Street today, and I've heard reports of people crying in Downing Street, advisers getting upset. I've heard reports this morning from my sources saying that cabinet ministers are desperately ringing around junior ministers to try and find out if they're about to resign or not. We've obviously had the first one of them already come in. But it's so unpredictable. It's so tense, I think it's fair to say, James, and yeah, nobody can predict exactly what's going to happen.
And of course, in these moments, it's always very difficult, if not impossible, to establish the kind of numbers behind the notion of Keir Starmer fighting on and you know, people nailing their colours to his mast in expectation of him leading them into another general election, because that cohort exists.
Absolutely. And we heard from Lisa Nandy yesterday, the Culture Secretary. She refused to say that Keir Starmer would lead into the next election. And I think privately that is exactly what many cabinet ministers, what many Labour MPs think. And it's not a question of when Sir Keir Starmer is going to go. It's a question, question of if Sir Keir Starmer is going to go. It's a question of if, when exactly that happens.
Don't worry, it's a very tense moment.
Getting giddy with all the excitement here in Downing Street. Everybody thinks that Keir Starmer is going to go for the next election. We don't know when, we don't know how, and we don't know who is going to replace him, but it is probably going to happen. I think it is incredibly unlikely that prime ministers can turn things around when they are looking so dire, when the polls are so bad, and when you are losing seat after seat after seat, council after council, and your MPs are saying to you they want to see more from you. Keir Starmer had his chance yesterday to win them over.
It's fair to say,
he didn't.
What's the sort of big fish? It's a cabinet level resignation, isn't it? Really, that we're looking for next. Otherwise, this sense of almost torpor, or this sense of sort of prolonged torture, it persists. But a cabinet level resignation is impossible to ignore.
Absolutely. I think that could change the game, a cabinet minister resignation, and we could get that today. We will be looking for the likes of Shabana Mahmood, who we hear, according to reports, said to the Prime Minister last night when she was in number 10, that she thinks that he should set out a timetable for departure. We also, of course, may hear from Wes Streeting today, now speaking to MPs that are close to him, and at the moment they believe that he does not still want to be the one to wield that knife and to actually launch a leadership challenge, even though he clearly does wants to run to be Prime Minister. So the question is, will he resign to launch that leadership challenge? I think there is a lot of reservation there, James, because you and I know that the people that you know, so often wield the knife do not wear the crown. And Wes Streeting very much is in that bank. He, you know, doesn't want to be the person that brings down this government. And this morning we've just had a message on social media from Steve Reid, the cabinet minister, who has just said on social media, this is not a game. This instability has consequences for people's lives. The people who will be hurt most will be those that elected us less than 2 years ago. We must unite behind the Prime Minister.
And that is the people to whom I will be talking this morning, of course, the people who voted for this man to be their Prime Minister. And less than 2 years after he arrived in Downing Street, they are being told by the members of his own party, the parliamentary Labour Party that their desires are not to be fulfilled. But of course, we've got no way of knowing how many people will welcome that. Well, quite feel free to send me a question instead of an answer. I've got a few written down in front of me. I think sometimes at moments like this, it's worth coming back to basics, as it were, at risk of channeling John Major, a prime minister who I can see more similarities with regarding Keir Starmer than a lot of the more recent incumbents of Downing Street. I mean, why is he in so much trouble? It is genuinely worth asking that question. A landslide, albeit a loveless one, a landslide that allowed them to do pretty much whatever they wanted. And I do this, as you know, for a living. And I still can't really tell you. I can point at mistakes, but I can't point at themes. Why is Keir Starmer in so much trouble? 0345 60 60 973. One of the main things, and I think this probably is another parallel with John Major, it's very hard to imagine anybody saying to you, in all seriousness, I love Keir Starmer because... and then adding a dot, dot, dot. I think one of the great tragedies of modern politics, post-Brexit politics, is that we've, as a population, sort of fallen into the trap of thinking that an outward veneer, usually fraudulent, of bonhomie, is somehow preferable to dullness. But Keir Starmer's dullness has not delivered the things that dullness was supposed to deliver. It was supposed to deliver competence. It was supposed to deliver efficiency. It was supposed to deliver results and tangible improvements. So you'd say he might not be the greatest orator in history, and you wouldn't necessarily want to go for a pina colada with him at the Dog and Duck, but this is what we need. We need a managerial prime minister, because that's how you get things done. And, of course, that hasn't happened. But there are also questions about what state the country is in. We have become addicted to this madness and this drama. It's ugly. I can't remember what life was like before 2016, before the British public was given permission to believe whatever it wanted to believe, regardless of facts and evidence. But I don't think Starmer is a victim of that. I do, for the absolute avoidance of doubt, I think Starmer has been close to disastrous in this role. And that hopium that we get high on when we convince ourselves that improvement is just around the corner, or we look at some of the legislation that's being brought in and reassure ourselves that this is what Labour governments are supposed to do. I'm afraid you have to be almost overdosing on hopium not to accept that that list is chronically overshadowed by all the bad stuff, whether political or personal. The idea that Keir Starmer has either delivered on the dullness premium or taken advantage of that massive majority is, it's just pie in the sky. And what he asked you to do yesterday was to give him another chance to sort of reset a reset. I can fully understand why people have run out of patience. The two things I can't do are properly track where the Labour voting public lie, how they will respond to being told, we're getting rid of the bloke that you voted for and replacing him with someone else. I don't know how that plays. I don't know whether it makes things worse for the party to engage in a round of very conservative-flavoured infighting and internecine warfare. And the other thing I don't know is whether or not there is any confidence out there that this would make things better. One thing I do know that was missing from Natasha's analysis is that if Wes Streeting has trouble convincing the parliamentary Labour Party that he should be the next Prime Minister, just you wait and see. I'll tell you now that the broader membership of the Labour Party is shouting, hold my pint, in the loudest of voices, because the idea of Wes Streeting getting through the parliament, the national membership is, it's slim to invisible. So... main question, first hour, why is Keir Starmer in so much trouble? And you can go as deep or as shallow as you like on that. Why is Keir Starmer in so much trouble? Second question, as a sort of slightly light-hearted side order, is I love Keir Starmer because... is there anybody in that category? People loved Margaret Thatcher. Hard to imagine anyone loving John Major. You could possibly... I love John Major because he was son of the bus driver and he proved that anybody can be Prime Minister in this country. I love Keir Starmer because... people loved Boris Johnson because they liked being lied to. People loved Nigel Farage because, like Donald Trump, he excuses and legitimises their racism, their misogyny, their climate change denial, their homophobia, their transphobia. More on the latest reform roundup later in the programme. But I love Keir Starmer because, are there ever any positives on the end of that sentence for politicians? I love Barack Obama because he gives me hope. I love so-and-so because at least he's honest. I love Keir Starmer because... So you have a go at that, but main question this hour, why is Starmer in so much trouble? With a little apology from me that this clip from Succession is running through my consciousness this morning like Blackpool through a stick of rock.
I love you, but you are not serious people.
PM Under Pressure. Follow it live on LBC.
Noticed a change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Is your cat drinking enough? Discover Purina One Hydrolife and help support their daily hydration with a taste they'll enjoy. Purina One Hydrolife. Make it easy.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as maths, English and science, I study creative subjects such as media, drama, art and design, business and music technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
26 minutes after 10 is the time. What I really want is the nailed-on anatomical analysis of what's gone wrong. Because the phrase I loved in the run-up to Keir Starmer's election was the one about the Ming vase, you know, carrying the Ming vase across the ice rink. I don't even know what that is now. I've got one suggestion here that's quite amusing, that it turned out to be an empty vessel. It did, didn't it? That's really well put, actually. I'd sometimes think we can overextend our analogies, but the Ming vase was successfully carried across the ice rink, as Brian points out, but it's now become increasingly evident that it was not a Ming vase at all. It was just an empty vessel. Tony says Starmer is Reform UK's biggest recruiting sergeant. I need a little bit more flesh on those bones. And then Keith, not that one, picks up on a point that I touched on earlier. I tell you what we are thinking, James. Do you freaking mind? How about asking the people who voted for him what they think? This whole drama is driven by the blooming media. It's not, though, is it? It's the council election results last week that were by any measure catastrophic. It's the growing sense that he can't change. He can't turn things around. That's where there is a parallel with Boris Johnson. Where Boris Johnson's moral corruption, he kept thinking, oh, he'll grow out of it, he'll move on, and it was clear that he never would. Keir Starmer, I mean, crikey, what would you rather have, a morally corrupt Prime Minister or an ineffectual Prime Minister? It shouldn't really be even a question, should it? But if the ineffectiveness is baked in, if there is an increased perception that the ineffectiveness isn't going to change, it's never going to get turned around. He's never going to deliver a speech that brings tears to your eyes and resolve to your heart. He can't deliver whatever it is that represents the opposite of crass populism. That is where patience runs out and self-interest kicks in. And I do think that's where we are. Although a quick nod to John, who points out, is it you sure it's an empty vessel? It could be a poisoned chalice. So question number one, why is Starmer in so much trouble? 03456060973. And I think possibly the more interesting answers there come from people who hoped for much more than this, as opposed to people from either side of the political divide who were prejudiced before he got elected and remain prejudiced now. It's that combination of opportunity, landslide and optimism that have been squandered in record time. And then I've got that little voice in the back of my head wondering how much of that is a consequence of coverage and how much of that is on the media. But I don't want to go there yet. I want to look at why precisely he is in so much trouble. Your diagnosis, if you like, of the current malaise. And then I love Keir Starmer because I just can't really see what follows that. Because, in a meaningful way, because he's not so-and-so, or because he didn't do this. That's not a reason to love someone. You don't love someone because they crossed the road at the right time or bought biscuits last night. Love has to go deeper than that. Maybe it's a ridiculous aspiration or ambition to have for a politician, but it seems to be a relevant one. And then later in the programme, we're probably going to look at who would be better and why. Because my feeling this morning is that it's not the fat lady is gargling, is what I would say to you. I don't think she's singing yet, but she is most definitely doing her vocal warm-ups. And I don't think anything will happen before the King's Speech is delivered, but I do think if I had to put money on something, and don't shoot me, but I'm 52-48, a plan for a peaceful departure will be in place by the end of the week. Although right now, at 10:30 on Tuesday, May the 12th, 2026, Keir Starmer is not intending to put his signature to that plan. The plan becomes real when he feels he has no other choice. And right now, he is saying to people who aspire to his crown, come and get it. I'm not giving it to you. I'm not giving it to you. Without a fight. If you want it, come and get it. And then you're left wondering about the character and calibre of potential candidates like Andy Burnham, Wes Streeting, Angela Rayner, and remember, quite possibly, somebody whose name doesn't immediately spring to mind at this moment, but may turn out to be something of a David Cameron candidate when everybody thought that David Davis was about to be anointed as leader of the Tories. 10:30 is the time. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Prime Minister is defying calls to quit, telling a meeting of his cabinet that the country expects them to get on with governing. Sir Keir Starmer says the process for challenging him as Labour leader has not been triggered and he'll continue in number 10. Earlier, Communities Minister Miatta van Bulle resigned from government. She's the first to quit as pressure mounts on Sir Keir Starmer to set a timetable for his departure following last week's election results. Nearly 80 Labour MPs, including the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood, have called for Sir Keir to step aside. The Housing Secretary Steve Reid's warned MPs, though, that instability has consequences for people's lives and urged them to unite behind the Prime Minister. The political uncertainty is having an impact on the markets this morning. Earlier, sterling fell against the US dollar and the euro, while UK long-term borrowing costs have also risen sharply. The Treasury has confirmed in the last few minutes that the Chancellor Rachel Reeves has pulled out an event today in the City of London. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. LBC weather. Northern areas will see some sunny spells with blustery showers developing later. Some patchy rain in the south. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC.
Tombola Arcade here to settle it once and for all. Being happy for your mate winning versus actually winning. Ah, the age-old battle. Sure, we should support our mates. And celebrating their wins is pretty sweet. But you know what's even sweeter? Winning yourself. Up the leaderboard you go. Hello, smugness, my old friend. Sometimes we just need to let fun win. Play slots, casino, and instant win games you won't find anywhere else. Download Tombola Arcade now, for fun's sake. 18 plus, gambleaware.org.
At Tesco, we know that right now, every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials, so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Lost World Play Barn. Dragon Castle Children's Farm. Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Stuff Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn. Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Aldous Blaze, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
My name's Dame Leslie Regan, consultant gynecologist and chair of the charity Wellbeing of Women. At Wellbeck London, we don't just treat our patients, we design an entire experience. Across every specialty, we select only those colleagues we would send our own families to. The result? A community of exceptional doctors constantly learning from each other, so you will always see the best doctor for you.
Discover more at Wellbeck.com. Wellbeck London. Beyond better healthcare.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I need a button on days like today. My apologies to Claire and Sue and Mo and Stu and Spencer and Colin and Alan and James and Chris and Sean and many others who are waiting to contribute to this programme, and I haven't let them yet. I need a button because I just took a deep breath in and thought, oh, and another thing. But I think it's time we took some calls. And indeed, we'll go first to Sue in Rochdale. Sue, congratulations.
Oh, right. Congratulations on what?
Rochdale just got promoted back to the Football League.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, my goodness, was it not nail-biting?
Up the Dale, Sue. Up the Dale.
Yes.
What made you pick up the phone today?
Well, I'm a Labour member, Labour activist, and I've got kind of thoughts on what's gone wrong.
Yes.
And one of the main things, it's nuanced, it's not just one thing, but one of the big things for me is about communication. And what's been really poor has been the story writing and the storytelling. Because this Labour government has done a lot of good things, but it has not been communicated well. That's in terms of how it's been written in the first place, sometimes the timing of communications, but certainly then, of course, the delivery. I don't think Keir Starmer is a bad person at all.
Nor do I.
I just don't think he is a good leader.
When did you arrive at that conclusion? I sense reluctantly.
It was reluctantly. I voted for him to be leader. I think it was around how he was unable to be relatable. It didn't matter how he tried to change his style or talk about his family, which I know he hates doing.
Yeah.
It's not his style. He just wasn't relatable. I still think he's a good person.
It's brutal, that, isn't it? Because it is. I know that you're deeper than this, but it is recognising that elections or political battles in many ways are beauty contests now.
Absolutely. Because the public has become really used to having a bit more of a personality leader. They're sold on charisma, which is no substitute for character, as we know.
Quite the opposite.
But actually, a leader does need to have something to fire people up, to, you know, get them going. I remember the joy when the Blair government came in. I mean, I fell out of love with him in the latter days, but sure, that sense of optimism, that joy, that May morning when they had won was phenomenal. We didn't get that this time, partly because I think the voters, a lot voted for Labour, but a lot voted against the Tories.
It was an exhaustion of patience in many ways.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Farage could benefit from that as well. He could get the hangover of the same exhaustion. Oh, well, just let someone else have a go. Because what we've had for 14 years is so awful. What breaks my heart and does make me wonder about the role that the media plays and does cast me in the role of David Mitchell in that Mitchell and Webb sketch going, are we the baddies? What breaks my heart is the way in which all of the people who said Brexit would be brilliant, Boris Johnson would be brilliant, Liz Truss would be brilliant, and of course, latterly, Donald Trump's going to be brilliant, that they are all sharpening their knives and coming for Keir Starmer. It doesn't mean that Keir Starmer should survive, but it makes a mockery of transparency, accountability, and current affairs coverage in this country. I mean, it would be funny if it was happening somewhere else. You can literally burn down five houses and then claim that you speak for the people when you come to burn down another one.
Yes, and I think moving forward, the influence of the media, both mainstream and through the internet, social media is something that all parties need to look at.
Because you can't win. And I mean, I can't say it now because there's an ongoing court case. But some of the, I mean, I'd need a new repository instead of Idiot's Corner. But some of the lies involving Keir Starmer that are currently doing the rounds on far-right media are so obviously nonsense and so obviously disproved that you can't believe anyone subscribes to them until you look at what the same people have to say about vaccines and chemtrails. Thank you, Sue. I will ask you, you don't have to answer because it's early doors, but you will have a vote if there is another election. Let's presume all obvious contenders have their hats in the ring, possibly including the Prime Minister, who knows. Who would you pump for and why?
I honestly don't know at this point.
Fair enough, good for you. We need more people like you.
I think it's a little bit worrying that Andy Burnham might be put in a position where he has to fight a seat which, in the current climate, could be unwinnable.
Yeah, and of course it frees up a vacancy for Mayor of Manchester as well. So, you know, you think that line about, well, things can't get any worse, is almost always false.
Quite. Anyway, thank you, James.
No, thank you, Sue. And once again, congratulations to the Dale. My late friend Andy would have been absolutely beside himself with joy at that result. I missed him very, very much when that final penalty was taken. Alan is in Wandsworth, former Labour Party honcho. Alan, what's gone wrong?
Good morning. Can I just say, Sue, brilliant, great
call. She was, wasn't she? Yeah, yes, very measured. And also, she'd never get a column in the British media with a measured lack of certainty like that. But go on.
Can I also say thank you to her for reminding me of those heady days back in May 1997. One of the most joyous days of my life was handing out those flags.
Yes.
In Downing Street.
Yeah, you can say thank you to that. Because she's dead right, isn't it? It was a completely different feeling, a completely different story.
People were storming out or pouring out onto the streets.
Yeah,
and that, to a certain extent, actually is part of the problem. Keir was sold by people who are harking back to those heady days. He was sold in the election as a man of change, when actually he probably should have been sold as a man of solidity, of managerial style, of being a trusted legal figure.
Yeah.
And that set up expectations when he came into office. But he turned up, I'm afraid to say, without really a plan.
That's
and one of the things,
go on.
One of the things that will probably haunt him eventually was his comment to somebody when he said that when I go, there'll be no such thing as Starmerism.
Mm.
And I think that was the first time I went, oh, no.
Don't say it out loud, even if it's true.
And then he started off with a massive, huge dose of doom and gloom. So we came in with all of this excitement and change, and when we got rid of the Tories, and then he said, oh, woe is us, and it's going to take another 50 years or something to change it, I don't know. And then the first thing he did was the winter fuel allowance. That is still being brought up on the doorstep, still being brought up.
It was so completely at odds with what was expected.
Exactly.
That was so. What do you think happened there? What do you think? It was a rush of blood to whose head?
I mean, I wasn't close to any of this, but I can only think they thought, let's get the pain early. Let's get the pain out of the way early and quick. But it set the tone. It set the tone, and it's been hanging around their neck ever since. And as Sue was saying, storytelling, story writing, story delivery, Keir talks inauthentically, I'm afraid. He's trying to talk as a politician when he isn't really, and that's not a bad thing. He doesn't have to be.
But make a virtue of it rather than a millstone.
Every politician has got to perform. Every presenter has got to perform themselves. They've got to give a performance, but it's got to be a performance of themselves. And he should be performing himself, how he is. And I watched him in his speech yesterday, and his intonation wasn't right. And I mean, I think I'd have just stood there with my hands in my pockets and talked instead of having a podium and an auto cue.
Yeah.
He could have talked from the heart. And within all of this, everything he's doing, we are living in at a time when we live amongst the politics of grievance.
Yes, of course we are. Go on.
And that I think stems from the expenses scandals of the MPs and the financial crash, when no one was held to account. Everyone seemed to get away with it. There was no reckoning. And the public are still desperate for that reckoning. And then you've got social media and parties such as Farage's Reform that are able to exploit these politics of grievance. Anger, disappointment, anxiety, mistrust, being ignored, And
of course, you know, you're going to have client journalists and various propagandists pretending that a few pairs of spectacles are comparable to a secret £5 million. Exactly. But still, the spectacles were a misstep, an avoidable misstep. I don't think it is unreasonable to say, all right, you've just got to be squeakier than clean. Don't do anything without imagining what the Daily Mail will do with it.
Yes.
So just don't do that. There you go. It's fairly straightforward. I would do anything for Labour, but I won't do that, you might have concluded, had Meatloaf still been with us. Alan, thank you. Alan Barnard. Quite a moment, that, wasn't it? Quite an image he conjured up of being one of the people handing out the flags at Downing Street when Tony Blair arrived for what felt at the time, and still feels in retrospect, rather like a coronation. It's taken less than 2 years for Keir Starmer's crown to slip, and it may yet fall. I want to know why. It can't just be communication and storytelling, can it? As Alan reminds us, the Winterfuel announcement was an epic misstep, even as loyalists, for whom I have nothing but sympathy and a modicum of admiration, still refuse to admit the scale of that error. And everything gets exaggerated. Everything gets embellished by the media. The idea that anybody with a straight face can pretend that Nigel Farage's secret £5 million from a bloke set to make billions if Farage becomes Prime Minister is comparable to some spectacles and a suit from a parliamentary colleague, that's a mark of how mad everything is. But remember, and this really matters, that's the country Keir Starmer sought to govern. It's not good enough to say, oh, he was on a hiding to nothing. That's so hypocritical. And look at the double standards. That's all true. The double standards are visible from space. It is absolutely despicable that people who brought you Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and cheerlead for Donald Trump are now claiming some sort of moral outrage or democratic mandate for getting rid of Keir Starmer. But that's the country he sought to govern. That's what he signed up for. That's what he needs to tackle. It is not a tactic to say, I wish things weren't like that. So they'll carry on. You know, open up your newspaper tomorrow, turn on your radio, there'll be somebody pretending that a couple of pairs of spectacles and a fancy suit are on the same moral page as a secret £5 million donation from a foreign-based billionaire. That's the stuff of collapsing democracies. Free spectacles are not the stuff of collapsing democracies, but that's where we are. That's the thing that he needed to cut through. That's the context, the environment that he somehow needed to triumph over. It is 10:45.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. That speech was lukewarm. It was not a speech to save your job, because there isn't another plan here. This is the plan. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £62 million. It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's draw. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings? Unusual markings?
You sure that sign didn't say naturists?
Oi! This is a nudist beach!
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl!
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday, the 18th of May. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID 3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:48 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the questions sort of write themselves, really, on days like today. But there is a little bit of skill in getting it pitch perfect. Why is Starmer in so much trouble? Who would be better and why? And the one that I haven't done enough of, and to be honest, my inbox is buzzing along a little bit too quickly to keep track of the messages coming in. Perhaps we could... Can we collate them? Like, can we do it? Can we have a little collation of people answering that I love Keir Starmer because ... with serious questions, and I'll take silly questions as well. Keith made a contribution to the production process today. Eh? When was the last time you did that, Keith, do you think? Penguins. It was Penguins. Yeah, before that? The point I'm making is that when it happens, it's very special. And Keith has pointed out that today is National Limerick Day. There once was a fellow called Keith who had... who had the most extraordinary teeth. He'd munch on a penguin, and of course nothing rhymes with penguin, which goes to show how hard it is to write limericks. I might read out, I don't want to turn into North Norfolk Digital, but Keith tells me they're doing it everywhere else. They're doing it on Classic FM. They're doing it on Capital. Was Dan doing it on Classic FM? He's a proper grown-up journalist. Are we sure? Okay, I'm doing it on Capital. Jordan was doing it, was he, reading out limericks on Capital? All right, well, I don't want to sort of stick out like a sore thumb in the canteen later in the day, as if that were possible. So I may take limericks about the situation that Keir Starmer currently finds himself in, and I will only read out good ones, which means there's a very real chance I won't read out any. Okay, but there it is. Text it to 84850 or WhatsApp it to 0345 6060 973, and don't use AI. In fact, why did you say that? Because they weren't going to use AI, and now you've given them the idea that they can use. Will we be able to tell if they'll use it? Don't use AI. All right, we might have a phone in about AI once the political situation calms down. So I suspect it will probably be in about 2033. So do make a note of that in your diaries. Mo's in Birmingham. Mo, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. I think one of the things that has really impinged on his ability to be an effective PM is I don't think 9 years is enough experience to be in Parliament, to understand politics, to understand the machinations of politics, to then be able to be an effective PM. I think if you look at some of our most effective PMs that we've had in the last 40 years, Margaret Thatcher, Tony Blair, Gordon Brown even, actually.
Briefly.
Yeah, briefly.
But he did actually save the world's economy. I mean, it gets massively overlooked, again, as a consequence of our bent media, but that's really just a matter of historical fact.
I think history will look on him very positively in 20, 30 years' time when people really look at the crux of the matter. These people have been in Parliament for over a decade and a bit. They had actually, even before that, run, you know, for constituency races that they were going to lose. So they know the hardships and they know what failure looks like. They've had to deal with it. They've known the machinations of what it takes to campaign and get a feel and an antenna of the people, and as a consequence react appropriately when they have the responsibility of power here. I don't think Starmer has that. You know, being parachuted into a very safe Labour seat. I don't think he fought a constituency fight before that as well.
So what you're saying is he's not a political animal.
No, and I think that's important here, especially in this era where we're a bit of an inflection point here.
Yeah.
Many of these people will have been born and known of an era where there wasn't 24-hour news coverage, there wasn't social media and so on. And their initial instincts may have been forged by that era as opposed to what we're in now.
Yeah. I suppose LBC, as ever, is a bit of an anomaly, isn't it? Because we'd have been doing 24-hour coverage of moments like this back in the day, even if nobody else was.
True, but you would have been only London-based. Birmingham may never have heard of you.
Good God, Mo. Good God, what a hideous apocalypse that represents.
Yeah.
Could you imagine not having ever heard of me? That would have been awful for you. I can't have a go. Tommy's turned over there in terror.
And I think with all that in mind, what I've just said, he has failed to do, I think, one thing abundantly clear to me that has, I think, really hit his PMship. He has not taken on his enemies head on.
Who are his enemies?
For me, and I'll give a great example here. Before the election, the last election year, it had been abundantly clear that the Conservatives had led this country to the point of beyond breaking.
Yes.
Yet, our political classes, our media, even, let's say, I remember before Tony Blair became PM in 97 here, even the Sun had endorsed him. All of these media moguls had withheld their consent to Starmer being PM.
Yeah.
They held their breath. It had been abundantly clear to me and to many people that this same media class were never going to give him or the Labour Party in any guise a chance to succeed.
Why not?
They don't want... No, I know.
Well, obviously, that's the obvious answer. But what... Because here's a question, Mo, that actually is one of the things, like a little pebble in my plimsoll. Do you know what I mean? I think Starmer has been very, very disappointing, to the point of disastrous. And I will hold that position, and I will defend it against all comers. Doesn't mean I'll win, but that is where I am now. And I don't think I want him to lead Labour into the next general election. And then I do that little thing, because I still have my hopium drip fixed up in the studio, where I think a little word appears in my head, unless he does this or unless he does that. So I'm not 100% there. I probably never will be, because I'm frightened about what the alternative might be. But when you say that, the little pebble in my plimsoll, what are they so scared of from Keir Starmer? So we describe him as ineffectual. We describe him as having carried the Ming vase across the ice ring and then done nothing with it. We describe him as all of these things. So what are they so scared of?
They were scared of an alternative voice being out there, however small, letting the public know, especially in this era of social media and so on, becoming more and more prominent, who would actually shed a light of how corrupt this class is, about how bent and how willing they're willing to drag this country to the pits of hell just so that they could be enriched. And that terrifies them. It terrifies his Trump.
But he hasn't done that.
No, he hasn't, and I think that's where I say that he hasn't been brave. He should have identified his opponents and had that seminal battle. He has got a great stonking majority in Parliament. He would not have had a better opportunity to really, and I know this sounds dramatic in the sort of language, really nobble his opponents and let them know,
I agree,
I'm going to rule.
I agree.
I've got the ability to lead.
I agree.
And he hasn't done that.
And you know, another sort of are we the baddies moment for me at the moment is that some slightly obvious and even perhaps glib suggestions about things that could have been done, and then you think, well, no, I'm a professional media commentator. I don't think you understand how complicated everything is. Leveson 2 on day one.
Yeah.
Tell the newspapers you're on flipping report card. Sort yourselves out, you corrupt liars. Leveson 2. Just do it. What's the worst that can happen? You think that the newspapers are going to go easy on you because you're not bringing in Leveson 2? Just do Leveson 2. Go after them.
Absolutely. And, you know, he should have been highlighting constantly
and then,
that these charlatans are responsible for where we are.
And then go after the social media mogul. You allow stuff on your social media platform that would actually constitute a criminal offence in this country and is indeed a criminal offence in this country, then you're on the hook. We'll do you for joint enterprise. So Elon Musk can go to jail for allowing those hideous comments made by Lucy Connolly to be put on. I don't know what would happen if you did these things, but I suppose we're describing the absence of dice being rolled, aren't we?
I'll tell you what it does happen, and this would have helped him, especially in a crisis like what happened with Mandelson and so on. Everyone makes, you know, an error in judgment and everything else. You know. It would have at least galvanised people.
Oh, you'd forgive it, mate. You'd forgive it. You'd forgive the missteps if there'd been some absolute dropkicks.
Yeah, and his fellow Labour supporters, the councillors, the voters and so on, would say, do you know what? He has taken up this one hill, a hill that we find very important. We feel that there is an establishment there that doesn't want a Labour Party or a Labour government to succeed. He's taken them on heads on. He's made a mistake, but you know what? We're human. We're prepared to forgive that mistake here, and we're prepared to stand on this hill, you know, ahead of him. He doesn't have that at this moment in our time. And it is, I think, maybe a lack of political antenna to have that battle. Kinnock had it with Militant.
Yeah.
Tony Blair had it with Clause 4. Fat Thatcher had it with the unions
Okay. Whatever side you're on, you can't dispute the conviction.
To that equivalent.
Well, as leader of the opposition, I suppose he sanitised the Labour Party of tolerance of and existence of anti-Semitism, and that is not to be diminished or misrepresented, but in power, nothing. Nothing on that page. And I don't know, maybe I am being a bit naive, but goodness me, everyone's allowed a break occasionally. Leveson too. Because what you do is you look at why the country is in such a mess. And the first answer to that question, unless you're going to reverse Brexit, is that people believe nonsense. So you have to start treating nonsense with the contempt that it deserves. And that would involve actually holding social media platforms to the same account that you hold mainstream media to, and holding mainstream media to a higher account. And that was underway with Leveson. Leveson happened because they were hacking dead girls' phones. And the effort, the tanks that were moved onto the lawns of this country by the media owners, the newspaper owners and their friends in broadcasting media, were absolutely immense. I can't remember who it was that finally buckled under the weight of those attacks. I think it was Theresa May. But up until that point, there was at one point a unanimity on the need for press regulation to just stop these charlatans and liars from polluting our public discourse. And then along came Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, and they simply said, hold my shandy. You think that's bad? You think that pollutes public discourse? Have a look at what we're going to do. We're going to have people on our platforms calling for pogroms. And then, 6 months later, they're going to be invited onto stages at party conferences to receive standing ovations, having been released from jail. And the people who publish that, the people who put that on platforms, they're just laughing and insulting this country from the other side of the Atlantic. And Starmer did nothing.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Prime Minister is defying calls to quit, telling a meeting of his cabinet the country expects them to get on with governing. Close to 80 Labour MPs have called for Sir Keir to step aside following last week's poor election results. Sir Keir Starmer says the process to challenge him as Labour leader has not been triggered, and he'll continue in number 10. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark is following developments from Downing Street.
A message there to anybody thinking about trying to oust him as Prime Minister. All of his cabinet, we know, have gathered today to hear what he had to say. Wes Streeting was, of course, the person that everybody is waiting to hear from. And the question now, as we go into this morning, potentially this afternoon, is Wes Streeting going to act?
The Science and Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, spoke to LBC after leaving the cabinet meeting.
The Prime Minister rightly said there's a process to challenge the leadership. There is no challenge. So I'm going to do what my job is.
Are you happy with what you've heard, Liz, today from the Prime Minister?
Absolutely.
And you think he's got the right man to take us through to the next election?
To focus on what the public elected us to do.
Thank you, Liz.
The Communities Minister, Miatta van Buller, has become the first minister to resign since last week's elections. She's urged Sir Keir to do the right thing and set a timetable for an orderly transition. The cost of government borrowing has risen this morning. The pound's dropped against the dollar and the euro in response to the increased political uncertainty. The interest rates on 10-year government bonds is now above 5%, a level last seen in 2008. And the Treasury has confirmed that the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has pulled out of an event today in the City of London. Do stay with LBC for the very latest throughout today. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 51 points at 10,216. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather. Northern areas will see some sunny spells. Blustery showers developing later, though. Patchy rain in the south, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
There once was a PM called Starmer. Uninspiring, not really a charmer. His polling was poor. His party showed him the door. He retired and became a donkey farmer. A lot of rhymes with Starmer, Karma and Farmer so far. It's National Limerick Day. I haven't gone completely mad. We're just collating a few more entries. I've instructed Amelia to bring through to the studio only the ones that are either brilliant or appalling. The massive majority will fall somewhere between the two. I'm not sure that Connor's actually does count as brilliant. It's definitely not appalling, but it doesn't quite scan Connor. He retired and became a donkey farmer. There's too many syllables. 3 minutes after 11 is the time. On a more serious note, the report now is that cabinet ministers have rallied around Keir Starmer after a key meeting, despite the resignation of one minister, Miatta Fan Bulle. And, of course, a lot of noise is off from the requisite number of MPs to trigger a leadership challenge, but not without a challenger, lads. You can't trigger a leadership challenge without a blooming challenger. That's not an opinion, that's counting. And who is going to stick their head above the parapet? There was one post on Blue Sky yesterday, which I felt really nailed things. This was given to Jessica Elgott, who is... I mentioned yesterday that all the best political journalists at the moment in this country are women. I'm not suggesting that that is... I think it's a good thing, just as a feminist and as the father of daughters and whatever other reason there may be, but it's also a mark of where the quality lies at the moment. Anyway, one Labour MP got in touch with Jessica Elgott of The Guardian last night to say, and this is great, there's a word here I can't use. Hang on, Keith, should we get a bleep ready? Pretend that we're professionals, or shall I just wing it? Have you got a bleep ready? No, okay, don't worry. We have to face up to... I'll just say the word then, and we'll see what Ofcom want to do about it. Is that all right with you, Eleanor? Yeah? Ready? We have to face up to the fact that every single one of them is... useless. Andy's strategy has been a disaster. Angela has bottled it. Ed's clearly on a hiding to nothing. Wes is AWOL, and God knows what Catherine West is doing. I'm not quite sure how we ended up here. To which my response was, put them in charge. Put them in charge. Anyway, here is Wes Streeting talking to Natasha Clarke, proving that although he hasn't technically gone AWOL, he kind of has.
Mr. Streeting? Mr. Streeting? Do you want to... Have you got any words about the Prime Minister? Should the Prime Minister go? Wes Streeting?
AWOL? I mean, he's there. Technically, isn't he? But he's not plugged in, it wouldn't appear. That's a great line. That might kick off the second hour of the programme, actually, although plenty of people still waiting to answer the questions we've already asked. We have to face up to the fact... I worry about reading this repeatedly, because I might accidentally say the rude word in the middle of it. We have to face up to the fact that every single one of them is chuffing useless, a Labour MP almost said last night. Andy's strategy has been a disaster. That's Burnham. Angela has bottled it. That's Rayner. Ed clearly is on a hiding to nothing. That's Miliband. And Wes, that's Streeting, is AWOL. God knows what Catherine West is doing. She was the one sort of collecting signatures yesterday. I am not quite sure how we ended up here. Let's add that question to the list. So, why is Keir Starmer in such extraordinary trouble? And, of course, with the side order of should he be? Should he be? I'm saying yes, mostly, to that. And it's not 52-48. That call from Mo in Birmingham, he was brilliant, wasn't he? But the thing you do in a country like this, as the author of a book called How They Broke Britain, the first thing you should have done is start swinging at the saboteurs, start swinging at the arsonists, start calling it out rather than thinking, oh, it's just a temporary lapse in normality. We'll be back to the days of Attlee, or we'll be back to the days of Wilson or Thatcher or Heath. We'll be back to normality. We'll be back to John Major. We just need to sit tight and turn a few knobs. Actually, no. You need to blow up the context in which a country could be turned into a place where the population repeatedly votes against its own interests. And by hook or by crook, you've got yourself a massive majority of people voting for an end to what has gone before. And be aware that Nigel Farage is lurking over there as one of the most responsible figures for the mess that the country is in, just saying, oh, well, maybe if we just had another go with an even bigger liar, with someone who's even more associated with racism and anti-Semitism and misogyny and climate change denial, someone who thinks Vladimir Putin is amazing and Donald Trump is a mensch, if we could just maybe have one more go at the madness and the corruption and the dishonesty and the racism, then everything it would actually turn out brilliantly, just like we told you it would in 2016 when you voted for Brexit, and 2019 when you voted for Boris Johnson, and Starmer didn't do it. Listen, I may get another call in 10 minutes that sends me off in an entirely different direction, but at the moment I'm Team Mo. You should have just done something about the people that are doing this country down while claiming to be patriots. You should have done something about the newspapers. You should have done something about the social media platforms. You should have done something about the abject corruption of public discourse. Look at what the racists are saying about you right now on social media, inventing absolute pie-in-the-sky stories involving criminal cases that, I mean, 5 years ago even, 10 years ago, definitely, 20 years ago, absolutely, would have been laughed off the page by anybody sentient in this country. But now, oh yes, it's a very, very valid talking point. There'll probably be a reform councillor popping up later claiming that it's true. It's as if chemtrails and vaccine conspiracists have been given the floor. And Keir Starmer turned up and just sort of went, well, you know, nobody agrees about everything, and what we need to do is put our shoulders to the wheel. Beginning to think he never read my last book. It's 10 minutes after 11. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Let's add that question to the list. I am not quite sure how we ended up here. So this broadens out the issue from Starmer to Rayner to Miliband to Streeting to Burnham. I'm not quite sure how we ended up here. We are basically discussing a leadership crisis with no challenger. And this is where I've got the David Mitchell thing kicking in again. Are we the enemy? Is this a leadership crisis caused largely by media coverage? No, because 80 MPs have told Catherine West that they want him to move on. But what are they responding to? Self-interest or media coverage? This idea that, oh, look, here's another crisis. Dumpy-dumpy-dump. Listen, I'm weird, right? Crises are good for business. Very good for business. Days like today, I could turn up at 10 to 10. I don't even need to read the papers. I know what I'm going to talk about when I come on air. There's no scrabbling around for topics or desperately wondering whether you're going to be interested in this or interested in that. Topics like this, days like this are milk and honey for me. Good for business. Great for business. But here it comes. Bad for the soul. So bad for the soul, because I'm watching my country burn. And Keir Starmer was supposed to be a firefighter. We saw on Friday that the arsonists are on the march again. The last building they burnt down is still smouldering, and they insist that they should be put in charge of the rebuilding process. It's insane what's happened to this country. And for me, at least, it's Starmer's failure to do anything about that. He courted the Times and the Sun. I don't know how closely you were following things. A colleague of mine's been in touch to point out that he gave all the juicy exclusives to the Times, to Rupert Murdoch's Times. He courted the Sun. He's taking questions at his conferences from GBBs and the Daily Mail. They want him dead. It is literally insane for him to be still courting these characters, these cretins, these corrupt operators, as if he is still living in 1996, when even Rupert Murdoch could be persuaded to give somebody else a chance. Those days are over. It's right wing or no wing. It's look after wealth or clear off. And he's still sucking up to them. He's still courting them when, as my colleague puts it, they refused to even countenance supporting you when it was clear you were going to win a landslide. You should have cut them loose then. Say what you like about opportunistic client journalists in this country. On a good day, they will work out which way the crowd is running and then get in front of it and pretend that they were leading all along. With Keir Starmer, they didn't even do that. They saw which way the crowd was running in enormous numbers and just sort of went, yeah, well, let's just sit tight. We'll come for him. We'll come for him. Give it 6 months. Give it a year. We'll come for him. And he gave them opportunities to come for him. That's the thing you can't forgive. That's the thing that I'm afraid blind loyalism can never assuage. He gave them opportunities. He wasn't squeaky clean. Rule one. What are we doing? How will the Daily Mail report it? Whether it's in public at the moment or not, how will the Daily Mail report it? But be careful, because the Daily Mail are nothing if not hypocrites. We're going to make Peter Mandelson ambassador. How will the Daily Mail report it? They'll love it, Prime Minister. Okay, let's crack on with that then. Oh, but By the way, when it blows up in your face, they will pretend that they never loved it. They will insist that it was an obvious indication of how unfit for the role you were and how that you should have seen this catastrophe coming from a million miles away, even though at the time they cheered it to the rafters. So, ask yourself, how will right-wing media deal with this nugget of information when they get hold of it? But remember, they are liars. They are snakes. So stop sucking up to them. Look at the list. Who's going to do that? Who's most likely to actually come at them? To actually say, this country deserves better. You brought us Brexit. You brought us Boris Johnson. You brought us Liz Truss. You brought us austerity. These political disasters don't happen without media connivance and media complicity. And now, you're coming for Keir Starmer. Who's going to stand up and stop that process? Because Keir Starmer didn't. Is Andy Burnham going to do that? I frankly doubt it. Is Angela Rayner going to do that? Is Ed Miliband going to do that? He's already had his chance. The Daily Mail maligned his dead father. Look it up. It's one of the most hideous examples, even by the grim standards of Paul Dacre, the former editor of that paper, when they came for Ed Miliband's dead dad, a military hero who served this country, and the Daily Mail came for his dead dad. So he's not going to do it. Wes Streeting seems unlikely. Used to be a good thing for a politician to be desperate to be liked. Now, I'm not so sure. And of course, Wes Streeting, whether he's desperate to be liked or not, is loathed by a significant swathe of the Labour Party membership. So you're looking at Angela Rayner, really, as the one most likely to take the battle to the right-wing media, who will immediately respond by saying, oh, she's just bitter because we turned her over regarding her stamp duty. Please don't mention Nigel Farage's secret I keep saying £5 million. I should apologise to Mr. Farage for that. It could be £50 million. We've got no idea how much money he secretly trousered from oligarchs and billionaires. Only he can answer those questions, and he won't even answer questions about the £5 million we know about. But here is Angela Rayner misunderstanding the stamp duty that she was required to pay. Zach Polanski, absolute wombat. Not paying council tax on a boat and then misleading the media when they came asking questions about it. Grim. And it's happening all the time with Zach Polanski. But his followers will point out that this is as nothing compared to a £5 million, possibly 50. Only one man can clear that up for us. Being secretly gifted to somebody shortly before he announces his intention to try to become Prime Minister. That's what you should be battling. You might not succeed, but you're never going to succeed when you're playing on a pitch that is steeper than Mount Everest. Unless you can at least level it a little bit, or at least you try to level it, you're never going to win. Keir Starmer was doomed from the start. Unless he tried to return the country to a place where the truth matters, to a place where facts prevail, to a place where comments like fake news or alternative facts are not only treated with contempt, but actively legislated against. It is not an affront to your freedom of speech to prevent you from calling for people to be burnt alive in their beds. It is not an affront to your freedom of speech to prevent you from lying through your teeth about other members of this population, or about observable scientific facts, or about what laws are in place in our capital city. These are libels, if you like, against populations. It is not a restriction of your freedom of speech to punish you for lying, for provoking, for inciting. And Keir Starmer blew it. He absolutely blew it. So how did we end up here? This rather pithy comment from a Labour MP last night. Andy's strategy has been a disaster. Angela has bottled it. Ed is on a hiding to nothing. Wes is AWOL. And God knows what Catherine West is doing. I am not quite sure how we ended up here. I am. I wasn't 10 minutes ago. This happens occasionally on this programme. It's been a while, hasn't it? But I'm not. I'm not puzzled. I know exactly how we ended up here. We are still operating in an ecosystem that has entirely corrupted truth. We are still lionizing people who brought this country to its knees. We are still promoting, whether it's to the editorship of The Spectator or the House of Lords, people who are proven failures and proven liars. Why? Because they are complicit in the protection of wealth. And the way that you persuade people who haven't got any wealth that they should be on that team as well is by fomenting the intoxication of racism, of misogyny, of homophobia. Give them someone to hate. Give them someone. And what did Keir Starmer do? He joined in. What did Shabana Bhimoon do? She joined in. Didn't make a stand against the two-minute hate that Orwell so presciently predicted. They didn't make a stand against it. They joined in. Because the ecosystem in which a country can cripple itself in the way that this country has done in the last 10 years persists. It's still in place. And what is the point of being prime minister if you're not going to try to return your country to reality? I don't care who's in the White House. I don't care who's in the Kremlin. I don't care who owns Twitter. I don't care who owns the Daily Mail. The only chance a population has of sustaining accountability, democracy and decency is if facts matter, if the truth prevails, if you and I are on opposing teams, biting chunks out of each other the minute the whistle blows, but we are in full agreement about what the rules of engagement are. You don't lie. You don't take £5 million from foreign-based billionaires and try to keep it secret and then refuse with the connivance of client journalists to answer questions about it. You don't cozy up to Vladimir Putin. You don't treat Donald Trump like a sane operator when his obvious dedication to the maligning of our country is visible from space. You take this on or you wither and you die. And Keir Starmer's done none of that. Instead, we've got this.
You've had some difficult questions about your own funding. Funding,
yeah, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that any other time you like.
And he's done nothing. Yesterday, a chancer and a grifter. Come on, man. 2 years you've had to call this character out. 2 years you've had to kill. Instead, you've nicked some of his policies. You've tried to nibble his lunch. And here you are. Saying, oh, give me another go. Give me another go. Give me another go.
PM Under Pressure. Follow it live on LBC.
Now, listen carefully. I want you to think of selling your car. Who's going to buy that car? Keep thinking. Struggling to know where to look? On Motorway, there are 7,500 verified dealers who are ready and waiting to bid on your car. It's not magic, it's Motorway. Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said, nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say nature ists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl!
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Is it a 20-minute monologue at the start of every hour now, asks Glenn, to which my only answer is, if you're lucky, Glenn, if you're lucky. Josephine's in Westminster. Josephine, what's going on?
Hi, James. Hello. So I think there was a real failure to make an immediate difference to people's lives that everyone could point to. So I heard Sadiq Khan mention on the newsagents that he made an immediate difference. So he instituted the night tube when he got into power, so he could at least point to that. Yeah. And back in 97, I was at a chronically underfunded inner city state school, so small that they had to ban running in the playground. And
why? In case you fell over and there was no one there to help
you? No, there were just too many kids and the playground was too small. And it was just, we lived in Santa Monica for a year and then came back to this. and there were no, in Santa Monica, there were computers.
I had an 18-hole golf course at my school, Josephine.
Insane. And the Labour government came into power, and our lives changed virtually overnight. We suddenly had textbooks, we had pens, we had a computer. And for me, it made a real difference. I ended up getting a scholarship to go to a private girls' school, and the rest is history. And so since then, I've been Labour through and through, because I saw in that moment, when you feel so viscerally the difference that politics can make to your life, it stays with you forever. So fast forward kind of almost 20 years to last year, when I was going into teacher training, thinking that I could kind of make a difference and give back. The Labour government had just come into power, and I really hoped that there would be a similar feeling in the schools, that, you know, there was a different, that there was a Labour government. And I got into the school, and really all you could feel was the consequences of 14 years of austerity on every level. Kind of, these are the kids who were born into a world with no sure start. These are the kids who were left just without education during COVID. And, you know, kind of suffering, and the schools themselves, the infrastructure, just suffering under 14 years of having to pick up the pieces of things that really should have been dealt with in the community. And it was just one of the most, it's been one of the most depressing experiences, really, of my life. And I felt really, as a as someone who voted Labour, hoping
they'd come in and do something. They'd do something about something.
Exactly.
And instead, they did the opposite. I mean, I know they needed to raise money and they had fiscal holes to fill, but they did the opposite, and they made life worse immediately for everybody on the winter fuel allowance. And some of those people,
they had time to plan. Yeah. That's the ridiculous thing, is that they literally, they had time to plan for their first 2 months in office. They could have thought, okay, we're going to do this, this and this to make people's lives better off. Similarly now with the local elections, they knew that the results were going to be disastrous. They knew that this was coming. And yet he didn't plan for any of it. So how is this? It's not leadership. It's not, people say
when did you arrive at this conclusion? When did you get to this point?
Pretty much immediately, actually.
Really?
When I was in the school and saw, and literally I was placed into a state school around the corner from the school that I had been at. And once again, the playground was too small for all the children to be in at once. And the school was in a worse state than the one that I was in back in 97. And it was just like, what has happened to this country? How is this possible that we've had a year of Labour government and nothing has changed? It was, and I'm angry on quite a deep level.
Clearly you are, and it's an incredible cocktail of personal and political that you've just shared. I'm really grateful to you, Josephine. And yes, I think you're right, actually. So making something better for someone. And I know the living wage, and I know, do free school meals extend beyond London? But if they don't, they could have taken a leaf out of Sadiq Khan's book on that one. And there's another example of why they should have taken on the pollution of public discourse. Look at the way Sadiq Khan is talked about and written about all over the world, despite presiding over a city that is routinely the wealthiest and happiest part of this country. It's insane that this narrative has been allowed to take hold, and that it is on that narrative that the really, really bad people are achieving power, not just elsewhere in the world, but quite possibly in this country as well. Thank you, Josephine. Do I intersperse every caller with a limerick at the moment? Amelia, have I got any way of knowing which ones you have decided are brilliant and which ones you've decided are awful? Oh, yes. Okay. Because, I mean, to be honest, it's not obvious immediately, is it? These are the good ones. Starting with Mike, who's in Hackney. There once was a man named Keir Starmer. There you go. Scans. Good start. I mean, they should all start like that, really. Centrist dads thought him a sheer charmer. He lied and he lied. His party membership died. In the country, he could no longer steer karma. That's brilliant. That's a brilliant one. Oh, Lord. Okay, here's a rubbish one. Starmer, what a plonker, threw away a massively... Yeah, all right, fair enough. This probably challenges the parameters of a limerick. There once was a producer named Keith who had quite extraordinary teeth. He munched on a penguin a listener had sent in, then exclaimed, that was tasty, good grief. Amelia, that's really good. That's a really good limerick. It scans, it's topical, it speaks to something that we talked about last week. Okay, back to the ones that you think... Back to the ones... Yeah, it might be bullying Keith, but, you know, man up. Back to the ones that Amelia thinks are brilliant. This is from Alan. There once was a leader named Keir, whose exit was whispered we hear, but he stands in his place with a look on his face that says, I'm not leaving this year. Boom! There's a good one. There we go. Yeah, all right. I might read out some more of these. It's 11:27. Jill's in Lewisham. Jill, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello, Jill.
On the question of how did we end up here, yes. I think for me, part of it is that we continue to be told, and many of us seem to believe, that showing empathy is a sign of weakness. So I voted for Starmer hoping for a return of some sort of empathy, which was completely missing from the Conservatives. I even wildly optimistically hoped we might see some sort of movement towards a legal route to asylum. In Australia, where I'm from, they allocate 20,000 places a year. But instead, he's trotted out the same lines on immigration, the same titled, you know, lines on that, cut disability benefits, continue to portray benefits claimants as work shy.
It's put fuel in Farage's bigoted tank, because that's the next big front in this country, as immigration comes down to the economic detriment of the entire nation, particularly the older people. Farage will start going after the people who are sick and poorly and between jobs, or under the pretense that they're all faking it or making it up. And I don't know, because 2020 hindsight is a wonderful thing, Jill. It's wonderful that you thought that at the time. At the time, I probably would have argued with you and said, look, that ship has sailed. How are you ever going to, A, point out that the reason why small boats exist is because the Tories closed down safe and legal routes, and B, that if you wanted to get rid of them, you could get rid of them tomorrow by reopening safe and legal routes, so that anyone who's crossing via irregular purposes is, by definition, breaking the law. They are avoiding the safe and legal routes, but instead they shut down the safe and legal routes and called anybody who got into a boat an illegal, turning an adjective into a noun. And you're right, Labour joined in. They didn't challenge it at all.
Yeah, and he didn't necessarily outline those plans prior to election, I thought that might have been too dangerous, and I hoped he was biding his time, but I was wrong.
Yeah, you were. You were wrong. Do you have any faith in any of the others? Hope? And charity. Sorry, carry on.
I think Wes Streeting, maybe. Yeah. I think he's young. It'll be our first gay Prime Minister. I think that would be a good thing.
Yes. I nearly said first out gay Prime Minister then, but I'm very glad I didn't. Yeah. So thank you, Jill. It is 11:30. Two questions on the board. How has it all gone so wrong? Why has it all gone so wrong? And also, how's the party ended up in such a mess? Because it's not all on Starmer. I don't think it is. Anyway, maybe you disagree. 03456060973 is the number you need. Of course, we shouldn't talk exclusively about Labour Party problems. Would you like me to indulge in a practice beloved of lazy radio programmes, where you insert a little bit of vaguely relevant music in order to tee up a story that's coming later? So, for example, if you were doing something about parking tickets, you might play Cars by Gary Newman, and you were doing it 40 years ago and you still do it now. Shall I do? Yeah, okay. Keith? In your own time. How do I do it? Do I talk over this? Or do I... What? Okay. And coming... Okay, so I'll cue you again. Are you ready? Okay. And on 3, 2, 1. Coming up next, strange goings-on in Doncaster. Our man in Yorkshire, Alex Taylor-Brown, will join us at 11:45. And now it's Dominic Ellis with the headlines.
A number of Keir Starmer's allies have rallied to back him following growing calls for him to quit as Prime Minister. Keir told his cabinet this morning that he won't stand down, and a challenge for the Labour Party leadership has not been triggered. He insisted he is taking responsibility for last week's election results, but says the country expects him to get on with governing. Around 80 Labour MPs have called on Sir Keir to quit, while Miatta Van Buller has resigned as the Communities Minister. Earlier, the cost of long-term government borrowing surged to a new 28-year high. The pound also weakened amid political uncertainty. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. LBC weather. Northern areas will see some sunny spells through today. Blustery showers moving in by the afternoon. Patchy rain in the south. A high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said, nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say nature-ists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh.
Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both captain hats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was 2 pastries, 1 boat ride and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Hey, Marcus Waring here. Cooking a balanced meal is my forte. But did you know most of us aren't getting enough omega-3 in our diets? Life often gets in the way. So I top up with 7C's Omega-3 Max Strength. It helps support my heart, brain and vision so I can keep doing what I love. 7C's Omega-3. Keep doing what you love.
Daily 250mg EPA and DHA supports normal heart function. Daily 250mg DHA supports normal brain function and vision. NDNS 2019-23.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 11:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Let's take it up to 12 and then maybe have a look at the other runners and riders. We've got to do, of course, a quick catch-up on what's going on in reform land as well because, well, frankly, somebody has to. Do you want a quick limerick before we carry on? But there are a couple of phone lines free in answer to the question of why has it all gone so wrong for Keir Starmer? And indeed, from the point of view of the whole party, how have they ended up in such an almighty mess? 03456060973. This is from, quite like this. This is from Laura in Renfrew. This is on Amelia's excellent list, not her terrible list. Although, frankly, from where I'm sitting, they're largely interchangeable. There once was a PM from Surrey whose star was fading in a hurry. They want him replaced, but can't choose a face, so he went for a beer and a curry. That's cropped up a bit, actually. I quite like Mikey's as well. There once was a PM named Keir. Just to clarify, it's National Limerick Day, all right? I haven't gone full Partridge. I'm not choosing to mark this moment by inviting you to send in limericks for no reason. It is National Limerick Day. At least that's what Keith told me earlier, and I probably should have checked. Now I come to think about it. There once was a PM named Keir. He once ate a curry with beer. He thought he knew best when he chased off the left, and now it's all ended in tears. But if you change that to beers, Mikey, there once was a PM named Keir. He once ate a curry with beers. Oh, but Keir, beer, tears, tear. Yeah, no, it's good, though. It's not bad. Tim's in Belfast. Tim, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello, Tim.
I'm very much in the area of media. I've worked in advertising for 40-plus years, and so I have a reasonable idea how it works.
Yes.
One of the key elements is simply repetition. I mean, we all give ourselves awards for creativity, but the bottom line is if you repeat the same message over and over again, people don't even realise they're adopting it. But
this is what Kemi Badenoch's doing at the moment. She's just going everywhere saying, I'm the winner! I'm the greatest! Yeah. I'm a winner! And I think it's going to work. I think people are going to start going, hey, that Kemi Badenoch's doing well. In fact, Keith, get the unhinged headline ready for when Tim's finished. Tim, carry on.
Okay, because, I mean, in Northern Ireland during the peace process, John Hume had a couple of mantras that he just repeated over and over again. But the question I want to ask, based on your book, which I've read, and my own ramblings about BBC Northern Ireland, why don't they do anything about it? Why does the government not? It's got theoretically got the power, but seems to put that in second place to the media. Why are we allowed in the UK to have media ownership of people who don't even live in the country? Why is the BBC still reading out newspaper headlines every single morning when the newspaper circulations in total are less than a million? Mm-hmm. So there's less than 60% of 60th.
Yeah, they've got quite a big online following.
They have.
Yeah.
But does that justify them reading out the headlines? Because every single morning...
Really, they should be playing out one of my monologues every morning on the BBC if they want to find out what the popular media outlets have got to say about the story of the moment.
Yes, but what happens then is that they're reading out the headlines of 80% plus right-wing headlines.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So every single time the BBC is amplifying the messages of the offshore billionaires who own these newspapers.
And Robbie Gibb is in the boardroom. Robbie Gibb is in the boardroom shouting, we need more right-wing content.
Yes, and so five or six people's opinions are absolutely sacrosanct in the United Kingdom, and the other 65 million of us get nothing. We get no say whatsoever. So why isn't Lisa Nandy, one, putting some backbone into Ofcom, which is absolutely pathetic, and two, starting to put in regulations about media ownership? Because the other side of this coin is, you know, we talk about Europe and the connection. America owns so much of the media now, and obviously it's run by the basket case Trump. But we don't do anything about it. We're letting this happen. The government is letting this happen. It has a huge majority. And then the freedom of the press, you've touched on it this morning. The freedom of the press should be held to account if they're caught lying. Mm. And there should be a whole organization making sure that if they're not telling the truth, if they're not, I mean, the BBC, for example, if it's not being balanced, it should be monitored, it should be held to account, it should be literally counting the minutes, because you could do this, that each person and each party is given in relevance to the size of their vote. And, I mean, it's insane, because it is... this is obviously, I got passionate about this, but you go back, the real genius in Nazi Germany was Goebbels, who was using sound film 2 years after it was invented, who was selling cheap radios in Germany, manufactured by the Nazi party, and selling them for buttons so their message could get out there. It's always been the case that the media are in control.
And so it was radios in Rwanda catalyzed the genocide there.
Completely. And what you have now is a system whereby by being liberal or even center, you were inclined to think that you want to be liked by everybody and everybody has a decent soul in them. I can guarantee if the media was the other way around and the right-wing government was elected, they'd be slamming it shut within weeks.
Well, they're going to try to slam, you've seen in America, they've tried to slam shut the little bits that they don't control. And you may well see something similar here, in which case, I could be picking you up in an Uber in Belfast sometime soon, Tim. But the short answer to your question, and I'm sure you know this, but it's not entirely rhetorical. Why won't they rock the boat, particularly when the boat is crewed largely by people who are their sworn enemies, is that the commercial impact of nobody else buying the boat. So they've just had to give the Telegraph to a German Donald Trump fan. The Telegraph has now gone to a German Donald Trump fan who came in with a slightly higher bid than a British Donald Trump fan called Viscount Rothermere, whose wife is giving money to Nigel Farage. So remove them from the process, and who ends up owning the newspaper? Answer nobody. Jobs go, businesses fail, and Keir Starmer takes the blame for that as well.
Oh, James, who cares? I mean, who cares? I was talking.
Oh, cry me a river! The Daily Telegraph has gone out of business. It's my late father's old paper, so I care a bit, but not in the way that I would have done 30 years ago.
I know, but who cares? I mean, the media, the vast majority of young people don't go anywhere near a newspaper.
No,
and that's the threat you have to them. But this is my point: is that the whole thing is that the government are there are reasons to not do it, so you let them carry on with it. This is this government's biggest weakness. There are always reasons to not do things. There are reasons, and they don't ever.
So that's
take
it then. That's
huge
the why haven't they done stuff? Is the question.
One
why
wonders.
Haven't they rocked the boat? What's your answer to the question?
Because they're fearful of it. Because they're actually. The whole thing about Starmer since the day he got into Prime Minister, as Prime Minister, is he has been completely dictated to by the media, and he's frightened of the headlines. And he doesn't realise. I mean, he should realise now with the number of people voting Green that there are lots of Liberal people out there who were praying that a Labour government would act like a Labour government. And from the minute he went in, he started to try to win over the right, who will never vote for him in a month of Sundays.
Yeah.
So why won't he do it? Because he's frightened. And so, this is why he's such a bad Prime Minister.
So never mind stop the boats. How about rocking the boat?
100%. And, you know, you're saying, OK, why don't you regulate it and say, actually, you know what, when there's a bid between a British company and a German company, the German company's not allowed to bid. Mm. We're not in Europe anymore. That's maybe what the only advantage of Brexit is, that you should not be allowed. Sling his hook. You can legislate. That's what a government's supposed to do. They're supposed to legislate for the running of the country. The country is currently being completely undermined by foreign media companies, and they're doing
And foreign-based billionaires giving secret donations to politicians. I don't think we should overlook them. I'll put that on the list, actually, for after we've done our I don't know whether, is it Reform Watch or UFO Watch that's coming up next? I think it could possibly be both. Tim, thank you. Fearfulness. Sometimes the obvious answer is the correct one. Why haven't they rocked the boat? Fear. Can I tell you that Mamdani in New York is introducing a tax on second homes? I'm going to read you three quotes from the coverage of this story in the Financial Times that are absolutely extraordinary. I think that this is a moment for me, and they will come for Mamdani in ways that Ed Miliband would find positively mild, or Keir Starmer will find positively mild, because Mamdani is rocking the boat. These are three actual quotes from a piece responding to the mayor of New York's plan to put a special tax on second homes. Second homes, right? Can I afford the tax? Is one quote. Can I afford? Do you want me to do an accent? Shall I do it? Shall I do a new? Can I afford the tax? No, I won't do an accent. Can I afford the tax? Yes. Is it going to deter me? No. But I think it's shameful. I provide a lot of money to people who are blue-collar workers who work for me. Servers in restaurants. Why shouldn't you pay a tax on your second home? Because I spend a lot of money on luxuries. Quote number two, what Mamdani just did to me and more broadly is doing to the city of New York is triggering the trauma I went through in Chicago. Says a man who is worth, currently, $50 billion. He has been, quotes, triggered, end quotes, by attacks on his second homes. Or third or fourth or fifth homes. Triggered, no less. A word that people from that side of the political fence suggested we shouldn't be allowed to use when we were talking about things like sex abuse and trauma. But when you're sticking a tax on people's multiple homes, triggered is the word that they reach for. And finally, my personal favourite, a lot of these people who have pied-à-terres, this is describing their apartments on Fifth Avenue and elsewhere, worth potentially millions of dollars, a lot of these people who have pied-à-terres are real people. A lot of people who have second homes are real people, and therefore that's just something as relatively innocuous as sticking a tax on second homes, a constituency of the country that is by definition going to be among the wealthiest and therefore the most able easily to pay, and also relatively tiny in the great scheme of things. But that's rocking the boat. That's rocking the boat. 11:45 is the time. Let's do that thing again, Keith. Coming up next, what's going on in Doncaster? Alex Taylor-Brown will tell us.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
This is a Prime Minister who came to power promising to, quote, end the political chaos. Where did it all go wrong?
Let's turn first to Lionel Barber.
When Keir Starmer announced that there were going to be welfare cuts and then reversed them because of opposition on the back benches.
Simon Lancaster, who is a speechwriter and author.
I would reel it back to actually the first couple of days after he became leader.
Let's get to the calls.
For me, it was when he first started bidding, basically, to be a Prime Minister.
There's no trust. Policies don't cut through because no one's really listening. The first budget from Rachel Reeves and the increase on the national insurance.
From all fronts, you know, you've got foreign policy, you've got spending.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say nature-ists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries, see travel differently.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
You've packed enough suitcases to know quality when you see it. Well, Saga Travel Insurance has been named a Which Best Buy. And now get 20% off when you buy before the 11th of June. Search Saga Travel Insurance for a quote today. New policies only. Standard and Plus are Which Best Buys May 2025. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 11:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Andy in Norwich has been in touch to point out that Keith Chegwin rhymes with penguin, which is not entirely true, actually, Andy, but nonetheless, we're grateful for your contribution. It feels appropriate that that should have come from Norwich, doesn't it? The land that gave us Alan Partridge in the first place. It is 11:49. Let's head up to Yorkshire next, where our Yorkshire correspondent Alex Taylor Brown is waiting. I've been told that we're not entirely clear. We haven't got a name for the feature at the moment, Alex. It used to be called Riley's Reform Roundup, but Henry is obviously often called upon to do other things, so I'm taking his name off the tin. I suggest that you and some of your colleagues might start competing for ownership of this feature moving forward, but in the meantime, we're going to call it the Farage 5 Million. We are looking for 5 million stories involving newly elected reform or of course already elected reform politicians to collate together before the next general election. But I wasn't expecting aliens to make an appearance quite so early.
No, very interesting, James. We'll get to that in a bit. I know you're excited about hearing about this. We'll get to that in a sec. But to sort of lay the land out for you, this was a council meeting, an extraordinary meeting called in yesterday around the borrowing of £57 million worth of money towards the reopening of Doncaster Sheffield Airport. So that closed in 2022. The previous owners, Peel Group, said it was no longer financially viable. There's been a massive campaign to get it back open locally. Local Labour politicians backing it. We've had Prime Minister Keir Starmer in Doncaster to back it as well. So the Reform Group, who are the largest party on the council, but the Labour mayor has the executive power, they say there was new information that came to light around this 125-year lease signed by the council, including an annual £5 million base rate loan to the owners of the Land Peel Group. They wanted an extraordinary meeting on it to discuss what they called rescinding the money. There's about a 2-hour council meeting yesterday, and after all that, the Reform Group decided to continue with the funding as planned, which they had already approved, by the way, in November originally, with safeguards in place. That includes written commitment that any new lease agreed is made available to councillors before it's approved.
So what happened to all the important new information that they'd discovered then?
So it would, they say that there was this new information that came to light in January. What the Labour Mayor, Ros Jones, told me was this information was already there, was discussed in council meetings, but that the Reform councillors hadn't always turned up to those meetings or read the detail around it. So I managed to chat to the deputy leader of the Reform Doncaster group. This is Jason Charity. And I asked him essentially whether, have you turned on this?
I don't think so. I think we've been all the way through looking at how we make DSA work, but we've got to make sure also that there's a sensible set of safeguards.
Could you understand the sort of concern around people see the word rescind and the future of the airport? Surely as reform, you want the airport open?
We do. 100% we want the airport open. Richard Tice, Reform's deputy leader, has been a massive supporter all the way through this process. We've been in daily contact with him. But we've always said this is not about signing a blank cheque. It's got to be the right deal. The original rescind motion, I think, was necessary to get parties to the table.
Has there maybe been instructions from the National Reform Party to maybe sort of question this?
No. This is squarely come from Reform Doncaster, and we reached out to HQ and said we need support on this, but we've driven this from Doncaster, and we've done this for the right reasons. We want DSA to be a success, but we're not prepared to write a blank cheque.
We heard there, James, using the word rescind just to get Mayor Ros Jones and the Labour executive to talk. James, that's caused all sorts of uncertainty around this. I've been told some people have pulled their job applications from the airport because this was, you know, all up in the air, if you pardon the pun. Businesses around the airport have had to put their planning on hold. A guy who runs a depot manager, he said, I want to expand the number of HGVs I've got. I can't at the moment because I don't even know what's happening. Now, we spoke to the deputy leader there. The leader is Craig Ward. You might remember him, James. We've spoken about him on the show before. There was an interview that went viral with one of the brilliant local reporters, Harry Harrison, a few months ago. This is how that went down.
A couple of times in that meeting and in the amendment, it's claimed by Reform that residents have faced a maximum council tax increase for the last 3 years. That's a lie, isn't it? It's not true.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a lie, Harry.
But it's not true. And I think you guys know it's not true.
It's not. Well, it is what it is. You know, it is what it is. It's been a rise.
So he's in charge now.
So he's the leader. He was at the meeting yesterday for the first time since that interview, James. This was the first one. That was about 2 months ago. We obviously want to speak to him. He's the leader of the Reform Group in Doncaster. We were told we can't. He had other appointments. As all the reporters left the council building, we actually saw what that other appointment was. He was sat in the pub beer garden opposite the council with a few of the other Reform councillors.
You'd think they'd have found a pub a bit further away from where all the journalists were gathered.
It is what it is, James.
It is what it is, Alex. It is what you're flying today.
And this wasn't even the most surprising thing, though, from the whole meeting. This is what Councillor Kieran Lay decided to raise during this meeting. Remember, this is about critical infrastructure, local area. This is what Reform Councillor Kieran Lay decided to talk about.
So, what I've got to say is not been mentioned by any member in this chamber, and it's been a topic that seems no one wants to cover. Given the rarefied unidentified anomaly phenomena, UAP, activity, recorded directly over an immediate vicinity of Doncaster Sheffield Airport, and in line with NASA's recommendations for evidence-based UAP oversight focused on aviation safety, I move to make the suggestion that full council establishes a temporary Doncaster UAP overview and safety committee or panel.
So he's talking about UFOs.
Like aliens.
Yeah. He's talking about UFOs and why no one wants to mention UFOs and what's Doncaster Council doing about it in a meeting about the future of the airport that could bring billions to the local economy, and he sort of throws NASA into the equation. If you watch the video, there's actually a lot of surprised looks by some of the fellow Reform councillors there. I could tell you there was bewilderment from the other journalists that were reporting on this. It's politics, James, but not as we know it.
Well played. Is he new, this lad?
So Doncaster Council, they had their elections last year.
So he's newish.
Newish, yeah.
And no word yet on aliens. No, I mean, no official council line on UFO policy.
There's no official UFO policy council line from Doncaster as of yet, but you know, I'm sure they'll be working hard on it.
Sensational stuff, and it is actually worth watching that clip because of the faces of some of his own colleagues responding to his. What was the subtext there, briefly, Alex? Is he under the impression that Doncaster might be a particular focus of alien activity, or is it more a sort of broader expression of solidarity with alien observance everywhere?
Well, I think there had been talk of some UAP, as he put it, sighting around his constituency right. just this week, and referenced some supersonic UAP from 2020 over the Bawtree area of Doncaster, which it hadn't been followed up, funnily enough, by the council. So we wanted to know more about why no more wasn't being done about it.
Is the Crown still in Bawtree?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, it used to be a wonderful spot, the Crown. A lot of the journalists covering the miners' strike used to stay at the Crown in Bawtree. My dad took me with him a couple of times. I have very fond memories of their snooker table. But no UFOs, as far as I can remember. But, you know, I probably was looking up, not looking up enough. I was too busy looking down. Thank you very much, Alex. Alex Taylor-Brown, LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, with news of... I don't know, really. What was that? I mean, some confusion, some sharp practice, and possibly some aliens. All thanks to Reform's increasing profile in local politics. I don't know what we're going to call it. We do know what we call it. We're calling it the path to the Farage 5 million, yeah? The Farage 5 million. We need 5 million stories. We're now up to 6. But it's only day 2. It's day 2 of the Farage 5 million. Keith, how many do we have to do a day if we're going to get up to 5 million before the next general election? Yeah, you're right, loads. Coming up in the next hour, I think we stay with the story of the moment. My sense is that the momentum has swung away from the vultures circling Keir Starmer, but quite possibly only for now. I think we're still very much in the space of wondering what on earth has gone so horribly wrong so quickly. A question that people will ask, I think, with good cause, whether they were optimistic and hopeful about this administration or whether they were still lying about the last 3 or 4 and the misery and suffering that they inflicted upon the nation. Most people expected more, I think, and want to know why they haven't got it. But given that some of the callers are prompting better questions than the one I spend 20 minutes asking at the beginning of every hour, let's add another one to the list. Why do you think they didn't rock the boat more? Or maybe you think they did, it just hasn't been properly reported.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, a number of Sir Keir Starmer's allies have rallied to back him following growing calls for him to quit as Prime Minister. Sir Keir told his cabinet this morning that he won't stand down and a challenge for the Labour Party leadership has not been triggered. He insisted he's taking responsibility for last week's election results but says the country expects him to get on with governing. The Science and Technology Secretary Liz Kendall spoke to LBC as she was leaving Number 10.
Our job is to do what we were elected to do, which is to serve the British public, to focus on their jobs and futures, not our own. He has my full support. The Prime Minister rightly said there's a process to challenge the leadership. There is no challenge.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, who's seen as a likely leadership rival, ignored questions from journalists when leaving Cabinet. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, asked Mr. Streeting on his thoughts about Sir Keir's future.
Mr. Streeting, do you want to... Have you got any words about the Prime Minister? Should the Prime Minister go? Wes Streeting?
More than 80 Labour MPs have called on Sir Keir to quit, while Meata Van Buller has resigned as Communities Minister this morning. The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, spoke to LBC on breakfast and urged disgruntled backbenchers to avoid public infighting.
The Prime Minister's right that these conversations should be happening internally because the public don't like parties that face inwards and have these arguments when they should be getting on with the job of government. We learnt that under the Conservatives, from Theresa May to Boris Johnson to Liz Truss to Rishi Sunak, and it's not in the interest of the Labour Party or the country for us to try to repeat that.
Earlier, the cost of long-term government borrowing surged to a new 28-year high. The pound also weakened amid the political uncertainty, while the Treasury has also confirmed that Chancellor Rachel Reeves has pulled out of an event today in the City of London. Stay with LBC for the very latest throughout the afternoon. One other story this lunchtime, and the Green Party leader Zach Polanski has admitted that he may have failed to pay the correct council tax while living on a houseboat in London. He's been under pressure to explain whether it was his primary residence, in which case he'd be liable for the tax. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 36 at £10,232. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather. Northern areas will see some sunny spells with blustery showers developing later. Some patchy rain in the south. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be 6 o'clock precisely.
Today in the UK, 100,000 people will call 999. 3,000 will say fire service. 465 will say, I think she's gone into labour. And one will say, the cat is stuck up a tree again. And every second, a BT employee will answer and connect those calls to the emergency services.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be brilliant.
BT, behind brilliant things.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12, it's not exactly what you would call a banner under which you would march to war, is it? The process for challenging the leader has not been triggered. I don't know why, I just adopted a voice slightly reminiscent of John Major there. That's who I'm probably most reminded of by Keir Starmer. And I would remind you that John Major came in for extraordinary amounts of abuse and repeated predictions of his imminent downfall. And then he won a general election against Neil Kinnock, against expectations. Although last time I spoke to Neil Kinnock about it, on full disclosure, he explained that he wasn't actually that surprised by the result. And if you were paying proper attention at the time, rather than being led by the nose by some of the media coverage, you too would not have been that shocked by his defeat. I don't know what the history books have judged on that question, but I mention it because 2020 hindsight is a wonderful thing. You see it a lot at the moment with Gordon Brown. You know, the idea that he was hounded out of office by attack. I remember when one television presenter, I think it was Jeremy Clarkson, called him a one-eyed Scottish idiot. And you sort of thought, this isn't normal. This is not normal. It was a clever little move of Clarkson's, really, in a way, setting the tone for the direction in which British politics would go in the next 16 years by being very, very ad hominem and vile. And now you look back on that and it doesn't really stand out at all in the lexicon of political insults. But at the time, I remember thinking it was absolutely disgusting behaviour. That was long before he was calling for the Duchess of Sussex to be paraded naked through the streets of this country and pelted with manure or something. I've forgotten the finer details of that remarkable intervention. And he remains one of my favourite journalists. So, you know, I'm very weird. And I suspect that Starmer won't enjoy that if this is the end of the pier for Keir. I suspect that he won't enjoy that retrospective reassessment. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I don't think people will look back and say, God, if only we'd realised what we had at the time. I tell you what, it was time for John Major to go, but he was a lot better than we gave him credit for. Some of the speeches he gave, correctly identifying exactly what would happen if this country left the European Union, will stand the test of time. And so with Gordon Brown and Alistair Darling's mission to save the world's economy, one of them flying uninvited to meet with single market finance ministers, because, of course, although we were in the EU at the time, we weren't in the single currency, so we didn't actually get a seat at that table necessarily. But Gordon Brown turned up and essentially led the agenda, essentially put the policies in place that would bring the country, bring the world back from the precipice. Alistair Darling, meanwhile, flew to the United States of America to make exactly the same case for exactly the same policies, and they prevailed. It's extraordinary to me. There are two things, I think, from the last 50 years of current affairs that in a better world, they would be understood and known by everybody. That's the first. That's the domestic version. I should jot this down, actually, because I am in the process of agreeing to writing another book, and this is kind of on the theme that the book is going to be about. That's the first. That Gordon Brown and Alistair Darling really did lead the world when it came to recovering from the 2008 global financial crisis. It is horrible to contemplate what might have happened if they had not prevailed. That's something that the entire country should have taken pride in. That's something that every single British person could have worn as a badge of honour. Our boys led the way. But of course, by the time it had been through the Murdoch mangle and the Daily Mail misinformation machine, the global financial crisis of 2008 was all Gordon Brown's fault. And by the time David Cameron became Prime Minister in 2010, the response to the global financial crisis of 2008 was to start shutting libraries in Wolverhampton and sure start centres in Kensal Green. That's how the world turns. So if it had been properly understood that Brown and Darling led the world on that, then history would look very different. That's point one. Point two is Don Perlman, this bloke I'm going to return to again and again and again, because I was deeply ashamed by how little I knew about him and the work he did when it came to scuppering the Kyoto Climate Agreement. And this bloke, who was like the godfather of Tufton Street, with no scientific qualifications whatsoever, set up an organisation that sounded fancy-schmancy scientific and started, while being on the payroll of all the big oil producers in the country, scuppering all of the legislation designed to make the world a healthier, safer place to live. And that was it, just for money and kicks. But dressed up as science, dressed up as a viable challenge to climate change science. And what he did has ramifications that will go on for generations and generations and generations. So that's the international dimension. Why are we where we are? As a country? Well, the level of misinformation and misleading required to deprive Gordon Brown and Alistair Darling of the credit for reversing the 2008 global financial crisis should have seen them installed in Downing Street for at least another decade. But it didn't. David Cameron got in instead with what's-his-chops Clegg in his pocket. And internationally, why are we where we are? Don Perlman. Have a look at it. It's an absolutely extraordinary story that should be taught in all schools. But that is perhaps a little big for today. Today we're looking at the micro question of why are we where we are. 81 Labour MPs now calling on Keir Starmer to stand down. Keir Starmer correctly pointing out that the process by which a leadership challenge would be triggered has not been triggered. I think best understood as it being impossible to have a leadership challenge without a leadership challenger, which adds to the idea that they are all currently bottling it. None of them want to wield the dagger, partly because, as someone very clever once said, he who wields the dagger never wears the crown. It's not entirely true, but it is true enough to have become a figure of speech. And that, I think, leads us to the question I have not asked on this programme for the longest time, but I'm going to ask you now. I'm actually going to ask you in quite a rude way, if you don't mind. Is there anybody? No, I can't do it. But can I be that rude? Do any of us have anything interesting to say about who should be next? We do. We must do, mustn't we? I've got a slightly embarrassing admission to make. I said it before Keir Starmer became Prime Minister, and I'll say it again now. And in some ways, it becomes a less embarrassing contribution to the conversation as a consequence from some of the calls that we've taken this hour and in the first hour. This idea of the package, the presentation, being inadequate, what Keir Starmer represents physically. People talk a lot about his intonation. I used to roll my eyes, but there comes a point when I've heard that word intonation so often that I think, well, you might roll your eyes, pal, but it obviously matters. People want to hear. I mean, Farage does this really weird thing where he sort of jerks around the place like this when he's talking, and I don't know, some of the sort of little weird mini-me's that surround him have started copying him as well. It's obviously more effective in some ways than Keir Starmer's manner or delivery. Boris Johnson, of course, famously pretends that he is forgetful and chaotic and sort of makes like an eccentric Oxford Don. Something about what Keir Starmer does butters very, very few parsnips. So I have said for a long time that I think Labour need a leader with a northern accent. And that is an incredibly shallow thing to say. I mean, incredibly shallow. But I live in Brexit Britain. This country has never been shallower. The electorate has never been less reliable. And there's something about, I speak as the son of a Yorkshireman and a Yorkshire woman, but who is very much the London-centric, centrist dad's paragon. I just think Labour need a leader with a northern accent, which puts Andy Burnham and Angela Rayner in the frame, doesn't it? That leaves, at the moment, Wes Streeting. And people talk a lot about Ed Miliband as a dark horse, but I can't quite see that myself. I don't think it matters to the exclusion of all else that he has already had one go and failed. But I just don't think the electorate would be very grateful for being given an opportunity to have another bite of the same of Ed Miliband's cherry. So I think we'll do. Who would be, well, not who would be better and why. Who do you want and why? 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. Who do you want and why? Because I'll tell you what, two things. When you think that things can't get any worse, you're almost certainly wrong. Things can always get worse, which is the follow-up to D-Ream's Things That Can Only Get Better that was considerably less successful. Things can always get worse. However bad things are, I don't know why my accent's gone a bit northern on this, but it sounds like a Yorkshire aphorism, doesn't it? However bad things are, son, things can always get worse. They can always get worse. However bad things are, it's a bit more Manchester than Yorkshire, perhaps. It's got a touch of the John Cooper Clarks to it. However bad things are, things can always get worse. And, I mean, the corollary of that is that the grass isn't always greener on the other side, of course. But who would make a difference and why? And there is every opportunity that you'll be hearing this phone in a lot in the coming weeks. I'll do my level best to do it as rarely as possible, but sometimes it's the only question to ask. Keir Starmer's hanging on. If someone were to mount a coup now, I think they would succeed. But so far, no one has found whatever it is you need to mount that coup. So, I'll give you four. You can add names to the list. Darren Jones makes a fairly good impression when he comes into studios. Wes Streeting, Angela Rayner, Andy Burnham, Ed Miliband, his name is always there or thereabouts, and Darren Jones we can add to the list. There's that defence lad as well. Al Carnes has also sort of... I think sometimes it is the one on the outside lane that you need to watch. But who would make a difference? And I want your answer, if it can, to encompass some of the things that we've been talking about for the last 2 hours. Some of the reasons why Starmer has failed. Where do you derive your optimism that this candidate would not fall into the same pratfalls, would not make the same mistakes, and would not fall at the same hurdles? Who do you want to lead the Labour Party and why? And I'm not taking Keir Starmer off that list. Because if you've been dismayed by all the people ringing up to write his epitaph, then by all means, contribute to the next bit of the conversation, the reasons why you think he deserves to stay. So who do you want to be leader of the Labour Party and why? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need.
PM Under Pressure. Follow it live on LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
It's me, again, to remind you that tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £62 million.
Which means it's time to play the song. Again!
Get in tonight's draw, Euro Millions, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Is your cat drinking enough? Discover Purina One Hydrolife and help support their daily hydration with a taste they'll enjoy. Purina One Hydrolife. Make it easy.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
12:16 is the time. Lots of questions on the board, lots of calls on the board, and lots of contributors waiting to come on. So we'll get through as much as we can. I know what you're thinking. Why don't you shut up then? Which is a perfectly valid criticism every single day. Michael's in Hawick. Michael, what would you like to say?
Good afternoon, James.
Hello,
it's actually Hawick. It's not Hawick, it's Hawick in the Scottish Borders.
Sorry.
I love you, James, but...
I love you, mate. I've already butchered various northern accents, and now I've butchered the pronunciation of a very northern town. Go on, then. Sorry.
A long time listener, James. So first time caller, so please be kind.
Of course I will.
I normally listen to you on catch up on my way to and from work, but I've recently retired. I'm a retired train driver, and before I say something, I just wanted to pass on my sincere thanks for your support.
Thank you. You're welcome.
In my mind, the Labour Party has just forgotten who they are. When you go back to when the Labour Party brought us the NHS, they were a socialist party. They're supposed to be a socialist party, and they're not. And at the moment, they spend more focus on winning votes from the right wing of the world instead of being honest about what they stand for. So they come out with this stuff about the boats and what they're going to do to stop the boats, when really what they should be doing is what they're going to do to help these people, because they're too scared of losing votes and stuff like that. They've forgotten who they are. And with respect to who do I want to take over from Keir Starmer, it needs to be somebody who is a socialist. I'm not a socialist, but I believe in socialist values. I believe in helping those less well off than us, and I believe in those that have more should pay more and stuff like that. And we're so far from that, it's just not true.
I think about this as often as other people think about the Roman Empire. I have got a theory that most people don't want to be perceived as needing help. And what happens then is that you very easily portray a left-wing party as being dedicated exclusively to the interests of people who need help, which creates two enormous problems. The first is that most people don't want to be categorised as needing help, even if they do need help. And the second is that it shuts down that slightly cynical line about strivers and alarm clock Britain. And what Labour should be doing is looking after people who go to work. So there's a perception that the people who need help are not the same as the people who go to work. And that is where your contribution both thrives and fails. Because at the moment, they're not making that clear. When we say we're going to help people who need help, we mean people who go to work as well as people who can't.
I'm not just on about those that can't work. I'm on about the working.
I know.
The Labour Party was born from the unions of the world.
Well,
the
exactly.
Labour Party was a left. The workers created the Labour Party for the workers. And this current Labour Party doesn't care about the workers. That's how it seems. When you look at things like the level of tax, and when you pay the high rate level of tax and how long it stayed at the same level for years and years and years. And they don't care about that. They care more about right-wing voting, winning people over and saying things they don't really want to say.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you don't believe it. The problem is, if you're a racist voter, you don't believe, even if Labour brought immigration down to zero, you're never going to believe that they hate the immigrants like you do, or like Nigel seems to. They're never going to steal that vote. They're never going to win it back if it's built upon bigotry and hatred. But
it constantly astounds me how the mainstream media keep going on about cutting taxes and cutting this, and this is the party to cut, to like the Reform Party or the Conservative Party want to cut taxes. And people don't understand that when you cut taxes, you cut services. You cut your council services, your NHS, your police, everything gets cut. But these people that vote for these parties don't seem to understand that you're actually cutting your nose off to spite your face.
What was it an Irene Bevin had to say about the purpose of the 20th century, of the Conservative Party in the 20th century was to persuade poverty to use its political power to keep wealth
exactly.
in power. And here we
exactly.
are.
Exactly, and they continue to do that to this day within the 21st century, 2026. And I've got colleagues and friends who I still stay friends with,
sure.
but I do not understand how they... I've got a colleague who's trying to move to Scotland who's convinced that the Reform Party are the best thing for Scotland.
Good Lord.
It's like... And,
And you try and explain to them, actually, no, they're just a bunch of billionaires who want to make more billions for themselves. And they can't see it. It's just...
Of the potential contenders, Michael, who do you think might be able to deliver some of what you describe?
I'm Scotty to my friends, and as far as I'm on, I don't know enough about him.
No.
But if he's a socialist person, as I'm being told, then Andy Burnham's the only option. West Street and alike, however, he's a right wing. Steve Reed, he's the guy that. He's the guy that was instrumental in bringing down Jeremy Corbyn with his Labour Together, their shadow party or whatever it was. So Steve Reed's going to support Keir Starmer. That's another thing, Jeremy. Sorry, James. That's another thing, James. There has been, and it was more prevalent under Boris Johnson, there has been for decades now, an undercurrent in government where it's all about what's best for me.
Yes.
Stuff the British public what's best for me. So your Steve Reeds and your Boris Johnsons are of that ilk. They just care about what's
best
for
Keir Starmer, I don't think Keir Starmer was of that ilk, was he? But he
no,
has,
I didn't say no.
No, I know you didn't. I know. You've got a right bee in your bonnet about Steve Reed. He's not someone that beeps. He doesn't beep on my radar particularly loudly.
Honestly,
that's all right. So Lauren agrees with you. He's a monster, according to one of the texters, so you're not on your own.
I'm in agreement with you with respect to Jeremy Corbyn. I was dearly hoping that he was going to win. However, Jeremy Corbyn let us down massively.
Yes.
In my opinion, he let us down with Brexit. He just did not come out and commit either way. If he'd have committed to staying in, which was against his ideal, that would have been good. If he'd have committed to coming out, if he'd have shown his true colours, he let us down massively. He let us down massively.
And we are, of course, still paying the price or still reaping the consequences of everything that went on during that mad period in British politics. The only thing that I think everyone could agree on is that the madness was not confined to the referendum and its immediate aftermath. There's a pretty strong case for arguing that what we're talking about today and what we're looking at today is a consequence or an echo of that madness as well. That quote in full, which I used to read out on a daily basis on the programme, how can wealth persuade poverty to use its political freedom to keep wealth in power? Here lies the whole art of conservative politics in the 20th century. There's one very obvious answer to that question that Aneurin Bevin posed probably not far off 100 years, well, probably 80 years ago. How can wealth persuade poverty to use its political freedom to keep wealth in power? Well, you could give £5 million secretly to the bloke that you want to be Prime Minister. That would be one way, if you think that that bloke has a peculiar ability to persuade poverty to vote for whatever it is that he represents, then that would be one very obvious answer to the question of how wealth can persuade poverty to use its political freedom to keep wealth in power. Give £5 million to a lying populist and just count the billions. Thank you, Michael. Hoik. Don't let me get that wrong next time. Sean's in Chester. Sean, what would you like to say?
For me, I think it's really important that we continue with Keir Starmer.
Go on.
As the Prime Minister. You know, as a country, we've gone through, he's our sixth PM in the last 10 years.
Absolutely bonkers.
So this concept of recycling through Prime Ministers every 2 years, you know, clearly isn't having the positive effect that, you know, everybody wants it.
It ain't working, is it?
No, it's not. You know, you keep trying the same thing over and over again. You know, think what he took over from, you know, 14 years worth of, you know, damage, certainly after Brexit, certainly coming out of COVID, you know, it accelerated the damage and probably the decline of the country. He's essentially turning a tank around. And, you know, can you expect somebody to do that in less than 2 years?
And while public discourse is being dictated and determined by institutions and individuals who deny the mess that he inherited, or at least deny the causes of the mess. I mean, this has been the thing that I've watched with increasing horror over the last 2 years. It's the people who brought you Brexit, who brought you austerity, who brought you Boris Johnson, who brought you Liz Truss, all sitting there going, God, that Keir Starmer's a right disaster. Look, he can't get us out of this hole that we dug. But they never mention that they dug it, which makes Keir Starmer's job infinitely harder.
Yeah, and, you know, there is work to be done, and I think what they need to be better at is explaining the why behind decisions that they make. You know, I'm not saying that they're perfect, yeah, that they've got everything right, and, you know, there has been some backtracking, and, you know, but you've got to put that, you know, there's advisors around him that should be saying, you know, come on, Kia. Is that really the best decision?
Yeah, if we it's think been it, if 2 years, it is, man. It's been yeah. 2 years, and I'd have taken that a year ago. I'd have taken it 18 months ago, but 2 years in, it ain't ever going to happen, is it? It's something about him, not the advisors. It's something about him that's maybe not up to it.
Yeah, it does. And is it a case of, you know, if the face fits, and clearly right now the face doesn't fit, but, you know, I really like the way he's come out and said, I'm getting on with it.
Yeah, I do. Then I feel the hope. If you remember that line in, I've just done an Irene Bevan, I'll do John Cleese now in Clockwise, when he says, it's not the despair that gets you, Joanne, I think the character's called. It's not the despair that gets you, Joanne. I can deal with the despair. It's the hope. It's the hope that gets you, Sean, every time. And 100%. That's where the hope, he's looking tough. He's standing up. He's not going to be bullied into walking away. Oh, lordy, lordy.
But yeah, Mark, you know, I'd certainly, you know, stick with him, and because I don't think there's anybody else out there who could do. You've got to remember as well, if you want to replace someone, you've got to replace someone with someone that we think is better for the long term. Is there really anyone out there, A, that's proven in that they're better in the long term at what he's doing? So, you know, it's very easy to put names forward, you know, to replace someone who we essentially think is underperforming. But there's no track record,
There's a lot of parallels with football, and I don't just say that as the man who invented the word footballification. David Baddiel said on Sky News last night that he, you know, it's like football now. The new manager comes in and he has to win. If he has five bad games, then they're already talking about getting rid of him. Politics didn't used to be like that. But you never hire a football manager. You very rarely hire a football manager who's not proved himself or herself in the past. Occasionally, you might hire someone who hasn't got a great managerial record or a very long managerial record, but they were a brilliant player, usually for the club that they're going in to manage. But politics never demands that, really, does it? It never really demands pedigree and track record when it comes to people vying to replace the leader or vying to replace the prime minister.
Yeah, well, you look at, you know, the best footballers in the world, Wayne Rooney, Roy Keane, Stephen Gerrard.
He saved it there. They're not very good managers. Yeah, they're not very good managers. So how do you decide who you're going to be? And being a good mayor of Manchester, a popular mayor of Manchester, may have zero bearing on whether or not you're going to make a decent prime minister. It's coming up to 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It was Laura, not Joanne, in Clockwise, so Sarah in Reigate. They're the kind of fact checks I like. I can deal with the despair, Laura. It's the hope that gets me, which pretty much sums up my attitude to politics, football, and indeed life. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has told his cabinet he's going nowhere as a growing number of MPs call for him to resign. The Prime Minister says a leadership challenge has not been triggered and the country expects them to get on with governing. More than 80 backbenchers say they want him to set out a timetable for his resignation. Miatta Fambulla is the first government minister to quit. The Chancellor has pulled out of an event in the City of London after the cost of long-term government borrowing surged to a 28-year high. The pound also fell against the dollar and the euro amid the political uncertainty. LBC weather, a bit of cloud and the odd light shower drifting south through the afternoon, brightening up for most later. Further north, there'll be some sunny spells with a few blustery showers, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC. Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Saga Travel Insurance covers most pre-existing medical conditions and has been named a Which Best Buy. Smart choice. And right now, you can get 20% off travel insurance until the 11th of June. Search Saga Travel Insurance for a quote today. New policies only, subject to medical screening. Standard and Plus are Which Best Buys May 2025. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulgutthealth.com/radio.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:32 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, that is in many ways, and you may not like me for pointing this out, but there is Keir Starmer's current plight and problem in a nutshell. The headline is, Keir Starmer is going nowhere. And, of course, many people will respond by going, well, that's precisely the problem, in every sense of the word. Natasha Clark has spent the morning barking fruitlessly at people outside Downing Street.
I didn't have too much luck, did I? I know. I think I do need a strepsil.
Has anyone ever got a story in those circles? Mrs. Sreeni, do you have a appointment? Will you be resigning? And then someone's wandered over and gone, do you know what, Natasha?
Yeah, you know what? I do think
I am resigning. Also, I'm going to be applying for the new job as manager of Manchester United. Yes. Get a proper exclusive.
Well, sometimes they do, you know, when, you know, you say to them, do you think the Prime Minister should stay? They go, yes. Or sometimes they say, you know, they give you a sort of knowing look, or sometimes they give you a smile. And I think you can tell a lot about the cabinet and how the feeling is in there from their expressions on their faces. So everybody going in today, James, was so glum,
Yes. Absolutely
straight faces. But yes, we did hear a few words from some of the people on the way out. And one of the people I did manage to grab was Liz Kendall, the Technology Secretary. Here was what she told me just after coming out of that cabinet meeting.
And that our job is to do what we were elected to do, which is to serve the British public, to focus on their jobs and futures, not our own. He has my full support. The Prime Minister rightly said there's a process to challenge the leadership. There is no challenge. So I'm going to do what my job is, which is to go and focus on what the British people want, which is their jobs, their future.
And just on that,
are you happy with what you've heard, Liz, today from the Prime Minister?
Absolutely.
And you think he's got the right man to take us through?
He is the right man to focus on what the public elected us to do.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Prime Minister. So that was loyalty from Liz, which obviously we expected. No one was expecting that she was going to come out and launch a leadership challenge. But there was a relatively glum face and complete silence from one other man.
Mr. Streeting.
Mr.
Streeting. Do you want to? Have you got any words about the Prime Minister?
Should the Prime Minister
go? Where's Streeting?
You can't hear my tumbleweed, but there is one there.
Well, and people may not fully understand why that is pertinent and important, because there is absolutely nothing to stop him doing what Liz Kendall did, or a fraction of what Liz Kendall did, or a simple, hello, I'm nothing to say today, I'm here to do my job as always, but silence, to coin a phrase, Natasha Clark, sometimes speaks volume.
It does. It really does today speak volumes. And I think we've just in the last sort of few minutes or so got a bit of a reason why he might have had silence this morning as he left that cabinet meeting, and why he actually left. It's one of the last people to leave. I've just been told by a government source that Keir said in cabinet today that he wouldn't discuss the elections or his leadership, and that he will only speak to cabinet ministers about that individually. I'm then told that Wes Streeting wanted to speak to Keir Starmer after cabinet, but I'm told, according to at least one source, trying to stand that up with other people who were in the room, after the meeting he refused to see cabinet ministers individually. So it sounded like Wes Streeting tried to have a conversation with the Prime Minister. Keir said at the cabinet meeting, Keir Starmer said at the cabinet meeting, I'm not going to discuss this now. This is for the business of government. And that might be why Wes Streeting is feeling and sounding quite so silent this afternoon. Mm. So
uncharacteristically silent. I don't mean that in a snide way. He is normally quite media friendly and quite talkative.
He is, and he's normally one of the government's, I think many people will agree, best defenders in terms of, you know, his communication style. He's very good at coming on the media, coming on the radio to talk to us and to make the case for the government. So it is really absent. It is a big elephant in the room here, because he's not saying anything. He's not talking. So the question is he going to launch a leadership campaign today? Keir Starmer saying, I'm going to fight on unless you formally trigger that ballot. And at the moment, it hasn't happened.
Would they wait until after the King's speech? Do you think it'd be very, very odd to expect the King to stand up or indeed sit down in the House of Commons tomorrow and House of Lords tomorrow and talk about my government when that government is in a state of, at the very least, flux?
Completely. And I think...
Don't worry, Keith, I said flux with an L.
I think if I were the government right now, that'd be exactly what I'd be telling MPs. I'd be saying, do you really want to embarrass the King tomorrow on his big day when he's opening the doing the state opening of Parliament? And that, I think, is actually a really powerful message. I think that number 10 that cabinet ministers who are seeking to be loyal to the Prime Minister could make to MPs that are thinking today. And actually, I thought it was interesting as well, you've had one ministerial resignation, but actually we had quite a flood of PPSs yesterday. So I do wonder if that message has got back to some ministers this morning that potentially were thinking about their position, potentially thinking about calling for the Prime Minister to go, wondering, well, if West Reading's not going to launch, if Andy Burnham's not got a seat sorted, is it really worth me resigning my seat and calling for the Prime Minister to go, especially bearing in mind what we've got in 24 hours' time with the King opening Parliament?
Indeedy-doody. Did you see that quote that I can't remember who picked it up. Hang on, Jessica L got picked up from an MP yesterday. We have to face up to the fact that every single one of them is effort chuffing useless. Andy's strategy has been a disaster. Angela has bottled it. Ed clearly is on a hiding to nothing. Wes is AWOL. God knows what Catherine West is doing. I'm not quite sure how we ended up here, because either we've all got very excited and carried away over not nothing, obviously, but more smoke than fire, or they have all failed to make a move at a time when making a move would probably have been successful.
Yes, and I think there is a question today for those leadership hopefuls, because we obviously have the numbers, right? There are 81 MPs that do want to see Sir Keir Starmer go. There are not 81 MPs that are coalesced around any one particular candidate.
Yes.
So is the question that, yeah, you're if you're an MP, you want to see that sort of strength. And is it now time to show strength and courage in calling for Keir Starmer to go? When does that overtake the loyalty to your government and the strength and courage of standing together? I can't speak for MPs. All I can speak for is the people that have spoken to me and that tell me that things are in such a mess and that can't continue. I think there is a general sense that this sort of continued chaos is not good for everyone. Look at the gilt markets this morning, look at the bond markets, look at everything that's happening around the world. And actually, I spoke to somebody else, another government source, who said that they don't think there was any dissent at Cabinet. Someone also made the point to me that John Healy made the point to Cabinet today that people are worried about the rising conflicts, they're worried about the war in Iran, Putin testing our defences. They mentioned that there is a few big weeks ahead for NATO, ahead of this summit. They said the full focus right now must be on the job of government. So it is a question as well that MPs will be pondering, the moral case for causing yet more instability,
yeah,
when we are in such a dangerous world right now. And I imagine that's exactly what John Healy was saying to the Prime Minister when he was speaking to him when he came into number 10 Downing Street yesterday. So there's a lot of things that MPs are thinking of. There's so much disquiet, so much unhappiness, but they've got some really big moral choices to make today.
Well, what's the sort of equivalent of the chair of the 1922 committee? We talk a lot when the Tories are in turmoil about the 1922 committee, but actually it's just messenger, not means.
Well, it's Catherine West, isn't it, now?
But, well, it's just not, though, is it? Because she probably can't even get through the door of Downing Street,
yeah,
at the moment. And as Alistair Campbell pointed out yesterday, if there is a grand plan starring Catherine West and a few PPSs, then it doesn't feel terribly thought through. A period of calm would do none of them any harm. The general election is a fair way off. The next legislative programme is about to be unveiled. There are better ways to reach such an important decision, and better times too. You are MPs, not commentators, who exist to feed a frenzy. Perhaps a perspective that's been heard enough this morning, but it's taken up by another Labour member. Alistair Campbell, of course, never an MP, Andrew Lewin, who I think sits in Welling Hatfield. Is that Grant Shapps' old constituency?
It is, yeah.
I am asking colleagues not to walk into a trap. A leadership contest now would be a gift to our opponents and do long-term damage to the Labour Party and, more importantly, the country. The PM has my support, and I've penned the below after watching his speech. And Mr. Lewin then shares insightful Substack that I read yesterday. Those voices are not being heard enough, perhaps, today, or those voices are not common enough to be heard more. It's hard to call.
They're also probably not strong enough at this point in time. When you've got MPs and ministers saying what, you know, they've said to Jessica Ryle, but what they're saying to myself and Aggie Shumbray day in, day out, that those voices are really strong. And it is fair to say that I tend to talk to the same sort of MPs really regularly. And the number of people who have slowly come to the conclusion that they don't think that Keir Starmer should continue leading the party, it's been a very slow process for some. And a very long, you know, a very quick process for others. You know, some were saying this 6 months, a year ago, and some have only just come to this conclusion in the last week. So it's not that simple, I think, in terms of the voices that are being heard and sort of what is and what isn't helpful. And when you say who is the man, there's no men in grey suits, there isn't.
No.
I have talked yesterday about the woman in the red jacket, which I'm calling Anna Turley. She's the Labour Party chair. She is
His wife, I've heard. It could be Victoria Starmer, who actually is the one that eventually says, let's call it quits.
Well, actually, interestingly, Beth Ruby did ask about that. I don't know if you heard that at the press conference yesterday. She said, what does Vic think about all of this? And he said, you know, Vic and I are in constant communication. We talk about all of these things. We talk about everything. Everything's talked through. And he didn't say, you know, she thinks I should stay. She thinks I should go. But clearly the Prime Minister feels like that. And clearly he is determined to fight on. And, you know, I think that has really solidified minds in the last few sort of hours from amongst MPs. The chaos that you might bring to the Labour Party, to this government, might be something that the Labour Party cannot recover from, very much like the Tories.
Indeedy doody. And other party leaders have their problems as well. Nigel Farage, of course, has 5 million, at least, that we know about. But Zach Polanski having to issue, is this his third apology in a week, or is it the second?
There was
the apology for sharing a tweet attacking the police when they collared that character in Gold is Green. Then there was another. Was there another one?
He has apologised quite a lot in the last week.
And now he's apologising because he did indeed not pay council tax when he lived on a canal boat. And
exactly.
That means not only is he apologising, but he's also given false information to media making inquiries.
Oh, we forgot about the Red Cross, of course. He apologised saying that he was not a Red Cross
spokesperson. That was it. Yeah, I knew there were three.
That was less than a week.
Three in a week.
I believe that was last Wednesday.
Right,
so there you go. Three in a week.
So this one is 3 years of not paying council tax, which is tricky for him, albeit that he is becoming one of those politicians whose most ardent admirers will never admit any wrongdoing or any fault. But it's tricky for someone who is whose platform largely consists of calling for people to pay more tax.
That's exactly it. And that's exactly what the crux of this issue is. And you know, I do think that many people out there, many members of the public, will find it incredibly difficult to believe that you don't know where you're paying council tax and you don't know if you've paid it or not, purely because it's such a large bill for many of us as well.
Yeah.
So it is quite something to, you know, for Zach Polanski to admit. So he said that he apologises sincerely for the unintentional mistake. But I think it does feel like there have been quite a lot of unintentional mistakes in the last 7 days. And for Zach Polanski, it's just another, you know, sort of sign of the intensity, the spotlight that is going to come his way if the Greens continue to do well up until the general election, right?
There was another one yesterday, wasn't there? Is that separate from the Red Cross one, when he said he'd been working for the Department of Justice in diversity and...
That was it. That was a report in the Telegraph
yesterday.
That's
four. Whereas, in fact, he was hired as an actor to pretend to be a criminal in a recruitment process for judges, which is not exactly the impression that's given by claiming that you've been working for the Department of Justice.
It feels a little disingenuous at best, doesn't it?
What's the biggest fib on your CV?
Biggest fib on my CV?
Or embellishment?
Probably my brilliant radio experience, I presume.
No, that's absolutely stone cold. That's not an opinion, Natasha. That's counting.
No, that's not.
Used to have on my CV,
on,
as written everywhere from the Daily Mirror to the Spectator, which
nice.
Was true, but I only wrote one article for
that's
the Spectator.
Okay.
It was on the cover. I mean, I used to have it framed, but sadly, given what happened to the Spectator in the ensuing years, it ended up in a skip, and indeed being removed from my CV. But that was an embellishment rather than a blatant, or
yeah,
at least
exactly.
It gave
when
a slight
impression.
When I
say my radio skills are sort of, you know, 2 out of 5 rather than 3 out of
Nonsense.
5, I think that's fine.
Nonsense. Thank you, Natasha. The time is 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Chris Ward, one of Keir Starmer's closest political allies, joins me shortly. The Prime Minister's challengers aren't ready, so he sits tight. If not him, who? And if not this Labour, what kind of Labour?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be 6 o'clock precisely.
Today in the UK, 850 small businesses will make their first sale. 1,300 homes will be connected to full fibre broadband. 100,000 calls for help will be answered.
999 with service.
4 million cyber threats will be prevented. And countless messages will say, good night, love.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be brilliant.
BT, behind brilliant things. Data includes BT Group customers.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun.
All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Did you cash back?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Oh, 2.
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
12:48, yesterday we had a Holocaust denier, we had a man calling for asylum seekers to be shot on sight, and we had a newly elected candidate describing Muslims as pure scum. That was day one of the new intake of reform politicians. We also had the one calling for Nigerians to be melted down and used to fill in potholes. The deputy leader of Durham County Council claimed he had been suspended. It then emerged that he hadn't. And Richard Tice, the deputy leader and major donor to Reform UK, in fact, are they all major donors, except Farage. He just takes money. So what's the name of the chairman? Zia Yusuf has given a ton of money to the outfit. Richard Tice has given them a ton of money. Nigel Farage has not given them a ton of money, but has taken a ton of money from another major donor, albeit that the £5 million he took from Christopher Harborne was secret, kept secret until journalists did their job. So that was yesterday. What's going on today? Thea Ricard is LBC's reporter in the Southwest. Start as you mean to go on, Thea.
Well, James, in the last half an hour or so, Reform UK has exclusively told LBC that Councillor Glenn Gibbons, who was elected onto Sunderland City Council on Thursday, has now, we understand, been suspended from the party. Now, that's after, as you say, he was accused of posting on social media that Nigerians should be melted down to fill in potholes. Something, as you say, you remember the party's deputy leader, Richard Tice, refused to directly condemn over the weekend. Here he is speaking to Laura Kunzberg on Sunday.
We have an internal party process, but here's the point.
Let me tell you, if somebody expresses that, we've
heard all the smearing and the sneering. Let me tell you what people are really concerned about.
Forgive me, Laura.
I'm going later to a campaign against the scourge of anti-Semitism, right, which is the greatest threat facing us here in, particularly in London, but elsewhere across the UK. That's what people are really concerned about.
Now, these suspensions are very much live, coming thick and fast every few hours, it seems, at the moment. You'll remember we spoke a few weeks ago, James, in the lead up to the local elections in England, and we had a look at some of the social media posts shared by the then Reform UK candidate Ben Rowe, one which he shared just last year depicted hundreds of Muslims in Mecca, which you'll know is the holiest site in Islam, being bombed. The caption to this post shared by Ben Rowe says, "The fastest way to world peace." Now, I saw this firsthand on his social media, but it appears it has now been deleted. And despite this post and others like it, including one he shared depicting Patrick from SpongeBob as a Muslim holding a gun, hand in hand with a child wearing a hijab and a speech bubble identifying her as his girlfriend, Ben Rowe was elected to Plymouth City Council last Thursday, winning more than 1,600 votes. And the candidate, just to put that into context, who came second got around 700. So Mr. Rowe was elected as a Reform UK councillor, but the party confirmed to LBC he's now been suspended and remains under investigation for his posts on social media. Now, when I asked exactly when he'd been suspended, I was told earlier in the day yesterday. So James, Ben Rowe was suspended on what was effectively his first day in the job. It is
for the things that you brought to our attention a month ago. There's no new information that is behind this suspension, as far as we're aware. It's all the stuff that was already on the record and in the public domain.
Indeed, indeed, James. Yes. And of course, it's important to note the Reform still claim to have some of the strongest vetting procedures in the country.
It's the best that money can buy, I heard. I don't know how much money. 5 million quid keeps springing to mind. I can't possibly imagine why. Do we know about Stuart Pryor? Are you across Stuart Pryor? Good Lord. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. About 5 million is getting ever closer. Do we know about Stuart Pryor, or do I get the pleasure and the privilege of sharing that one?
We do know. Let me take you through some of the others who we've seen suspended in the last few days since the local elections, James. Joe Monk, who previously led Worcestershire County Council, has been suspended alongside her son, who is also a councillor, after criticism of the council's new leader on social media. In a statement, a Reform spokesperson said councillors Ashley Monk and Joe Monk have been suspended from Reform UK pending investigation. Also yesterday, we heard Essex County Council and Rochford District Council councillor Stuart Pryor resigned from Reform despite denying any wrongdoing, with the party announcing his membership had been revoked over alleged racist posts. So yeah, as I say, these suspensions of new councillors by Reform UK coming thick and fast this afternoon. And while chaos within Labour might be the main story today, Reform certainly has their own problems after the local elections.
Stuart Pryor describing white people as the master race, which will no doubt concern Richard Tice, given his professed concern for these kind of comments and these kind of issues. I mean, I'm struggling to keep Canthia, but you've done a brilliant job of steering us through the weeds. Alan Amos, the new leader down in Worcestershire, he's the guy that said that rape is easy to report and difficult to prove, so that police should stop recording it as an offence. Although I suppose in Nigel Farage's defence, Alan Amos was a Tory when he said that, before defecting to Reform and then being given the top job at Worcestershire County Council. I think I've got that right. Thea Ricard, thank you very much indeed. LBC's reporter in the South West, doing a sterling job of keeping up with the rising tide of bigotry, racism, and worse, that is being brought into the public sphere by Nigel Farage's little helpers. It's extraordinary what £5 million can buy you, isn't it, in this day and age? Coming up to 12:55, you're listening to James O'Brien. Shall we return to the big questions of the day? Have I done my bit? Have I done all my bits? I've got him and him, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and counting. Of course, I suppose behind the bigotry and the racism, it's also worth pointing out that they're all so stupid, aren't they? I'm not suggesting that an intelligent racist is preferable to a thick racist, but it's not exactly a wonderful advertisement for our democratic process that these really thick people are getting elected. They're doing cartoons of SpongeBob, Islamophobic cartoons of SpongeBob SquarePants. Or claiming that Nigerians... First of all, that comment, if you see a black person in the street, how do you know where they're from? And chances are, if you see them on the street in this country, they're British. But how on earth would you determine that somebody with black skin is Nigerian? I've no idea. But they're just so thick. That's the weirdest thing about the people drawn to Nigel Farage. They are obviously and often racist, but they are almost always really stupid as well. 12:55 is the time, and it has happened. The thing I suggested to you at the very top of the show would be something of a game changer, despite Keir Starmer's resolve to fight on. Jess Phillips has broken cover and resigned from the government. That is a significant development. She is, of course, the Minister for Safeguarding and a particularly effective parliamentarian, a tireless campaigner for women's rights, who, to return to one of my themes on this programme, who has also, of course, come under extraordinary attack from the sort of far-right horror show that dominates social media, despite having dedicated her entire pre-political working life to looking after vulnerable and abused women. Jess Phillips has now resigned from the government as safeguarding minister, which I'm luckier. It's up to Sheila now to make predictions. I'm about to clock off for the day, but I suspect that will be the beginning rather than the end of a process. Only time will tell. I did have an unhinged headline for you. My apologies to James and Mike, who are still hanging on in the hope of getting on the programme, but I'll just say good afternoon to you both. James, I'm sorry. I don't think I'm going to have time to hear. Can you do it in a sentence?
Yes.
Go on, then.
I think Clive Lewis would be a great Prime Minister. He's got the intellect, he's a great campaigner and a great communicator, and the media seem to have decided already who's going to be the Labour leader, but I think...
Well, I haven't. I am the media, and I haven't, but I mean, it's up to Clive Lewis, isn't it, whether he throws his hat into the ring, and then up to the parliamentary Labour Party, whether they propel him forward, but nice to see other names on the list. And Mike in Daventry. Mike, in a sentence?
I think the one with the best reputation and probably the media would have trouble is Al Carnes.
Yeah, I mean,
war hero.
Yes, it cometh the hour. Calvin Bailey was very impressive in this studio not long ago as well. Yeah, so it could well be, if it's a longer process, if it is a matter of Keir Starmer setting a date and then having a relatively peaceful progress to it, it could well be that some unexpected names appear and some interesting characters emerge. But just because traditions are important, I do have for you now one of the arguably all-time great.
Unhinged headline.
This is from Melanie Phillips in The Times, who I'm not sure has ever written an article that didn't appear under an unhinged headline. Badenoch shows the spine voters want to see. This is proof of what I predicted yesterday is now happening. Kemi Badenoch is walking around the world as if she's won everything. I don't know what the football equivalent would be, but it's having an empty trophy cabinet, but doing 74 laps of honour. And if she does it this persistently and this effectively, then eventually people are going to start thinking she's actually a winner who's doing well. And first of all is Melanie Phillips with Badenoch shows the spine voters want to see. This after an extraordinary rejection of Badenoch by those self-same voters.
Unhinged headline.
If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bit from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now, it's time for Sheila Fogarty!
I don't think I've ever had a drum roll before.
Right,
thank you very much indeed.
I shall make it a daily occurrence from now on.
Okay, good God, don't do that. as James said just a few moments ago, Jess Phillips, the MP, Jess Phillips, very well known to the public, has resigned her ministerial job. She's a big figure. She's not quite as big a figure as perhaps Shabana Mahmood and Wes Streeting are in terms of what they do next. All eyes on them, don't go anywhere. I'll be joined in a moment by Chris Ward. He's one of Keir Starmer's closest political allies. He's arguably one of the people who shaped him for power. Well, it's pretty clear that power is well and truly in doubt, under attack even. The Prime Minister's challenges don't yet seem ready. Again, stay tuned. If not him, then who? And if not this Labour Party, what kind of Labour Party?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From
Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Prime Minister has told the Cabinet he's going nowhere and the country expects them to get on with governing. More than 80 MPs are now calling for him to stand down following last week's local election results. In an unprecedented move, Cabinet ministers spoke to reporters as they left Downing Street, including Business Secretary Peter Kyle. He echoed Sir Keir Starmer's words to them that a leadership challenge hasn't been triggered.
Well, it's the fact. We've had a very purposeful Cabinet meeting talking about the big issues facing our economy and society. Nothing has been triggered. I'm about to go off to Brussels to continue working with Brussels to deepen a relationship, to benefit Britain. We are working hard on the big issues that are facing the country, and Keir is showing really steadfast leadership.
Well, in the last few minutes, Jess Phillips became the second government minister to resign after Miatta Fambula stepped down earlier. Ms Phillips says she is not seeing the change she thinks the country expects. Paulette Hamilton, who is Labour MP for Birmingham Erdington, is one of the backbenchers echoing that. She says the British people want change.
Sir Keir Starmer is somebody I personally like, but his likability on the doorstep has been terrible. People do not want him there. They don't trust him. They do not think he's the right person to take this forward.
Stay with LBC for the latest developments. The Chancellor has pulled out of an event in the City of London after the cost of long-term government borrowing surged to a new 28-year high. The pound also weakened against the dollar and the euro amid the political uncertainty. Zach Polanski has admitted he may have failed to pay the correct council tax while living on a houseboat in London. The Green Party leader is facing questions over whether it was his primary residence. He previously claimed he only stayed on the boat occasionally, but has now issued an apology. And a spokesman says Bonnie Tyler remains seriously ill but is stable following emergency intestinal surgery. The 74-year-old was put into an induced coma by doctors in Portugal last week. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 41 points at 10,227. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a bit of cloud and the odd light shower drifting south through the afternoon, brightening up for most places later. Further north, there'll be some sunny spells with a few blustery showers, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
I'm in the kitchen with Charlie Bigham. So what have we got here, Charlie?
My brand new pan-fried pad thai noodles.
Noodles? But you're Mr. Fish Pie Guy.
Guilty. And while ovens rule at roasting,
the pan is king of noodling.
Whether it's pad thai, yakisoba or laksa, finding that perfect texture is a bottomless noodle rabbit hole.
But all I have to do is stir it in the pan for 6 minutes, right?
Bingo! Try the new Charlie Bigham's Asian pan-fry noodle range, handmade in my kitchen.
Pan-fried in yours.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Well, we start with the news that broke in the last few minutes that Jess Phillips, a very well-known and senior minister in the government, has resigned her post. She's written a long letter to the Prime Minister as to why. I won't go into it in all the detail of the letter now, because I'll talk about it more in a few minutes. But I'm joined by Chris Ward, Parliamentary Secretary to the Cabinet Office and Labour MP for Brighton, Kemptown and Peacehaven. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining me.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
I mean, you know, for people who might know your background, your provenance, you know Sir Keir Starmer's thinking better than anyone in politics. You were absolutely front and centre with him when he first became an MP. What will be going through his mind now? What strategy will he be sort of developing now?
Look, I mean, the Prime Minister is determined to govern and deliver what he has fought for so long, actually, and got into politics to do, which is change people's lives for the better. And it's why he cares so much about this, that, you know, the Labour Party doesn't win elections very often. It won one less than 2 years ago because of a lot of hard work we did collectively as a party. And he's determined to take forward that in the next phase of the government, which will obviously has the King's Speech tomorrow, and try and take on the huge challenge we now face from Reform to our right and the Greens to the left.
One of the things that's in Jess Phillips' letter, your reaction to her resignation in a moment, but she says the desire not to have an argument, his desire not to have an argument, means we rarely make an argument, leaving opportunities for progress stalled and delayed. She's a big loss, isn't she, to this government?
I think Jess has been a brilliant minister and a good colleague and good friend. I'm really sorry. I've only just seen that letter as I was coming on.
His lack of desire to have an argument?
No, I disagree. I think if you actually look at Keir's leadership over the last, whatever, 7 years, he's had arguments and defined it all the way through, really. And he changed the Labour Party and he got us into a position where we could win that general election, which no one thought we could when he took over. And he's continuing to have that now and deliver real change on it. But I'm really sorry to see that from Jess. I think she's been a brilliant minister and I respect her hugely.
Do you think her resignation is a significant one, not just because of her talents, but because of where he, the Prime Minister, currently finds himself? Will it lead to more?
I mean, what I would say is this government, we were sent here to govern, we should get on with governing. And talking internally and having a divisive leadership contest over the next couple of months, which is what it will be tremendously destabilising for the country and the party. And we spent 14 years getting in this place, right? We lost 4 general elections. I worked very hard with Keir, a lot of other people did as well, to get us in a place where we could win a general election again. The public do not thank parties who spend their time fighting with each other in government. We've seen that with the Tories. I'd really strongly advise people not to try and do that now.
What would you say to them as to why? What's your moral argument, your moral case for them not resigning and not following Jess Phillips?
The truth is that everyone is upset with the results last week. I mean, I lost councillors in my constituency who worked brilliantly and really hard. Everyone's hurting from that. And we're all looking at different ways to try and rebuild the party and the country. And I completely understand that. My caution would be that the very worst thing we could do at this point is spend the next period of time talking to ourselves, dividing the party, and not focusing on what we're here to do, which is govern and make the changes. Keir will set that out tomorrow in the King's Speech, a whole raft of changes we're going to make to take the country forward. Putting all that at risk into a leadership with no certain outcome is really, I think, a very dangerous place for us to be.
But he gave a hint at some of those changes in that speech yesterday, and they seem to amount, again, we'll hear the full speech tomorrow, but they seem to amount, in the view of most of the people we spoke to yesterday, to backbenchers like yourself, to a hill of beans that, young people will have more access to the EU. That's not necessarily the most important thing to them. It would be a nice thing, but it's not the most important thing to them. A British Steel, again, that won't have chimed with the majority of the electorate. These results were, you say, upsetting, but they weren't baffling, were they? You know why they were so bad.
I said they were really disappointing and they're really painful for us, right? As I say, I spent a long time with my councillors out fighting those seats. Everyone did. And they're really, it's really tough to see that. The Labour Party goes through good moments and bad moments. And we are at our best when we're united. We're at our worst when we divide and we fight each other. I'm very worried about that's where we'll be. In terms of the content of the King's Speech, the Prime Minister set out a couple of bits yesterday. There's a lot more in the King's Speech than that. We did 50 bills in the last Parliament. We will do a lot more in this one that's coming through. And actually, the changes you're talking about there, renationalising British Steel, which is a massive step, by the way, for a government to be taking, putting us back at the heart of Europe, something I'm working on in the Cabinet Office, is a massive step forward. And it builds on the progress we've already made in the first year.
Can I challenge that? It's not a massive step forward if, when asked whether it will involve the single market or the customs union, we get the same old procedural Keir Starmer that says slowly